Friday night, 9 p.m., if you, well, it's Friday night. And I'm Pat LaMarche. I'm filling in for Rick Smith, who has decided to take a very deserved day off. This is my first time back in the studio since we went on our great big trip. And I'm having flashbacks listening to all that warm-up music. I think I heard George Bush's voice. And instantly, like right behind my eyelids, I saw the lies of the Bush library unfolding in triplicate and quadruplicate. Amazing things. The things that are given to a president don't belong to him anymore. And so a lot of the library stuff is a collection of things that were given by forward heads, foreign heads of state and other things. And so one of the takeaways I had from the Bush Library was the elaborate 1,100-carat, no, not that much probably, but the solid gold and diamonds necklace given to Condoleezza Rice. What is up with that? You know, the stuffed lions and all the other stuff that, you know, and taxidermy lions, I mean, all these other things that were given to the Bush family, to the Bush White House, ended up there. And entire fantasy departments. In fact, almost the entire museum was fantasy. And I'm sure that if you listened to the shows as we were traveling through the country, you heard about that stuff. But just hearing his voice brought that all back to me, like, ugh. Well, this is my first time on the air since George Zimmerman was found not guilty of anything. Not guilty of manslaughter, not guilty of black person killing, not guilty of even racism. Anywhere but in the court of public opinion. And I had that guy guilty in my court of public opinion, which is why I wouldn't have been a good juror. Unfortunately, they should have found some good jurors. That would have been a good idea. But George Zimmerman's racist profiling of Trayvon Martin has been just sort of wiped away by this court trial. I'm in mourning over this thing. I'm upset. I can't stop being upset. For people who post on my Facebook page, get over it. I have one answer, and that's stop being so lazy. You know, if your country can't be a better place because you're too lazy to make your country a better place, well, don't harp on me because I'm having trouble with the fact that it's duck season for black people in the United States, which means you better duck. It's appalling and it's horrifying. And all these things are coming out or peeling out. Huffington Post Gene Demby dug up MySpace page posts belonging to George Zimmerman. He dug further than the original journalist, Florida newspaper journalist who found the MySpace stuff. And they're just plain racism, unbridled racism. He calls himself in his MySpace page Joe G. By the way, his attorney, Mark O'Mara, says it is, in fact, George Zimmerman's MySpace page. The initial page was made public by the Miami Herald, but the dude from Huffington Post has gone further with it. By the way, if you would like to vent your feelings about George Zimmerman or about Trayvon Martin or about anything that's happened this week, we're together. It's Friday night from 9 till midnight, so we're together on this, and you can weigh in on that. The number is 888-520-7425, 888-520-RICK, our fearless leader. So 888-520-7425, and give us a call. We are going to talk with a juvenile advocate, an attorney from the state of Pennsylvania, and find out what life's like for young people in the state. 17-year-olds shouldn't be gunned down. I think that's probably poor parenting by the part of society. And we'll find out what life's like. Are there laws, anything like this, stand your ground law here in the state of Commonwealth of Pennsylvania? And he'll be joining us in just a little bit. Ron Truro will be joining us. But on Zimmerman's Legal Defense Fund website, his lawyers admit that the MySpace page is his. And they say that they caution the reader that the page will cast Mr. Zimmerman in a less than favorable light, especially considering the charges he faces. I don't think he'd be making millions of dollars on a website page if he wasn't facing those charges. I didn't see him as someone anyone was seeking out to hire or send money to prior to him killing Trayvon Martin. I don't miss this is what he wrote about his former home, Manassas, Virginia, just up the road a piece. He wrote in a biographical blurb about himself, calling himself Joe G. I don't miss driving around scared to hit Mexicans walking on the side of the street. Now, for everyone who said he was a Hispanic and therefore not a white guy, first of all, Hispanics are Caucasians, but second of all, he certainly didn't identify with the Mexicans in this post. I don't miss driving around scared to hit Mexicans walking on the side of the street. Soft ass wannabe thugs messing with people's cars when they ain't around. This guy was so paranoid. Working 96 hours to get a decent paycheck, getting knives pulled on you by every Mexican you run into. That's what he said about his biography. That's how he described himself. In August 24th of 2005, he had a blog post where he boasted about proceedings in a criminal case. He said, I'm still free. The ex-ho tried her hardest, but the judge saw through it. Big Mike, repping the D-verse security, making me look like a million bucks, broke her down. So, charges were filed by his ex-girlfriend against him for being violent. I mean, this is the guy who gunned down Trayvon Martin. This is the man who lied to the judge about how much money he had and had to have his bail revoked. Of course, they took that judge off the case. A few days later, he expressed his happiness that other charges against him were reduced to misdemeanors. Two felonies dropped to one misdemeanor. The man knows he was wrong, but he still got this hump. Thinks people are out to get him because he... I guess the misdemeanor of attacking his old girlfriend went through. In 2005, a 20-year-old Zimmerman was arrested and charged after an altercation with a police officer the same year his ex-fiancée filed a restraining order against him and accused him of domestic violence. We're going to talk with Ron Truro, and he's going to tell us what he thinks of the trial. When I did have a brief chat with Ron earlier this week, and he said that the lawyer that Zimmerman had was just about as high-priced a lawyer as you could possibly get, and that he figures weighed in pretty heavily on what ended up. The thing that I'm finding, and it, maybe it's just me because I may be a polarizing person, but the thing that I'm finding really kind of remarkable right now is really how vociferously people are defending Zimmerman. You know, and they're the same people who were absolutely convinced that O.J. Simpson did it. Now, the people who are condemning Zimmerman, some of them, like me, are condemning Zimmerman, but also condemned O.J. Simpson. So it's kind of interesting. A friend of mine said possibly the most thoughtful thing about it. He was defending Zimmerman's actions in shooting Trayvon Martin. And he said that the one thing he knows for sure is whether you're on the Trayvon Martin side or you're on the Zimmerman, George Zimmerman side, he would know how you felt about abortion and the Second Amendment by how you responded to the Trayvon Martin question. And I think that's really interesting and very true that people have sort of fallen down along that line, probably. The tough thing about that is, It works the other way too. If you're defending Zimmerman, we know how you feel about those issues also. And it's helping us to be more divided. I have this real, sadness over the fact that in 20 something states across this country, you have the ability to shoot somebody. Even if the fear you feel is a fear that you caused, a fear you went out and asked for, went looking for. 888-520-7425, 888-520-RICK. This is Pat LaMarche filling in for Rick Smith, who's got the night off, hanging out with the family. We're going to go to the phones, and Mark is on the phone. Hey, Mark, welcome to the Rick Smith Show.
Hey, Pat, thank you, and welcome back to Pennsylvania, I presume.
Yeah, I'm happy to be back, except you guys turned the heat up while I was gone.
I didn't. I'm about an hour and a half from Sanford, Florida. That's where I'm calling you from, Pat.
You are. Well, I tell you what, it's been pretty hot up here. So you're right there in Florida. What's it like on the ground down in Florida right now? Is it still, are people still feeling like me? They're still talking about it and angry and.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, they've, I think they met with, the governor, Rick Scott today. The normal people, petitioned the governor to show up and, I guess apparently he did. It's not making, it's not really mainstream press because they're so well controlled, on a local level from where I'm calling you from. It probably will be, in the Miami Herald if it's, tomorrow, and it'll be in the Tampa Tribune for sure. I'm also, a former City of Miami policeman, Pat. In 1981, I had left the Marine Corps after serving in Central and South America, and the son of a and the grandson of a union worker, and I'm also a union worker currently, Pat.
I think we might have talked before, Mark.
You have, and yeah. I don't normally share with people in the union that I was a policeman because I think there's policemen are can be misinterpreted by. People in labor, and sometimes rightfully so. I just happen to be a blue-collar ethic person, and maybe why I let myself be driven out of law enforcement. I'm a very judicious person.
It's a shame, not, too, though, because it seems as though that would be natural allies, police officers and other working-class people, you know?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, and actually, that's correct. You would think... there would be an affinity, kind of an us against them, but
right.
You know, it's really bizarre. At the 2003 protest, Pat, we had the North American Free Trader. It was called the FTA protest in Spanish. They wanted the permanent Central American, I think Latin American headquarters placed in Miami. I happen to be a part of labor, and I won't disclose what union I'm in, but it's a pretty popular one. I don't know how powerful they are, but in any case. We do have a building in Washington D.C., but my point is our leadership did not tell their members not to go, but you could see and feel that it possibly may have been discouraged. But nonetheless, I'm a free American, and I felt like protesting the free trade agreement, permanent headquarters in Miami was in stepping with organized labor, and it was, and it still continues to be. Mm-hmm. And I also at that protest, Pat, I think you might. Appreciate that there was a large feeling amongst the people. The majority of the people were also opposed to the war in Iraq, so it kind of became a combined, you know, war protest. And I thought you might appreciate from a labor standpoint that the policemen were very heavy-handed. There was estimated at over 6,000 cops from all over the state of Florida converged there, and there was about 15,000 organized labor people. Sweeney and Richard Trumka happened to be there. Some other popular people, and I went on my own. I actually marched with Minnesota workers, ironically, Minnesota union people. And being an ex-Marine, I kind of have a degree of survivability about me that I just can't get rid of. But these were big Viking-looking dudes, so I thought, you know, I'm a pretty good-sized guy myself. So I said, "Hey, you guys are from Minnesota," and they had purple shirts. And I said, "Do you mind if I march with you guys?" And said, "No, get him a shirt, get him a pin, and." So anyway, I did march with them, and we filled the streets in downtown Miami. It was a very professional protest. And labor, we had retired United Needles and Trades people. We had a lot of longshoremen. We had iron workers for security. They wore obviously an obvious green shirt. It was a prearranged, pre-authorized march. We weren't really looked upon as combatants by anybody, but the thing fell apart at a certain particular hour. I'll just share with you, and it probably won't come to Pat LaMarche's surprise, but there's footage that was shown on Democracy Now! From a number of camera angles, Pat, that showed people that tried to dress up like they perceived union construction people to be dressed, but they were wearing backpacks, and none of the none of the people that I saw that were associated with labor, they all wore their nice jeans, their nice work belts, men and women, their boots, and their proud union-made T-shirts. You know, we weren't in the Army, but we were pretty squared away, and we chanted. Being an ex-Marine, I knew some of the cadence calls we did, and, and we did labor marches, and they ricocheted off the buildings. It was quite invigorating in the heart. As you heard all the voices of the men and women ricocheting off the buildings downtown Miami that afternoon. But what I noticed that anybody that's interested in looking at, it's on YouTube still, there are various filming of the free trade protest. I'll get back to the Trayvon thing, but these people were not in the union that tried to dress like us. And turns out that there were two men and one woman. And I think the woman may have had a bandana, but they were actually police paid provocateurs. And then got up behind us, and as the crowd confronted the police, kind of becomes a bit of a contentious moment there. And you could see them reaching to in their backpacks, Pat, and pulling items out and throwing over the heads of the legitimate protesters, and striking their fellow cops that were in not only uniform, they were in battle gear. They had helmets and their large batons, their big, I don't know how tall the baton is, probably over 4 feet probably at least. And it was a very militaristic situation. Choppers flying overhead. There were light armored personnel carriers there from the state police. A huge show of force. It was really, the presence to me, Pat, was so intimidating that it really led to the conclusion that they were probably trying to precipitate. But and it did. But my point is, there's a lot more in detail with that protest. And so that's a little bit about just some of my association with marching and protest, and having been a policeman, having been a City of Miami cop actually in 1981, I was able to see things in the crowd and experience things. But I proudly wore my union hard hat with my American flag and then my United We Stand and Divided We Fall sticker in Spanish on the other side of my heart.
I was pretty heavily involved in a lot of the protests as well. In 2004, I ran for vice president on the Green Party ticket, and myself and David Cobb. Yeah. I was there when they arrested a vast number of people at the New York City protests, where we protested the Republican convention, as well as, the war and all the other things. Not allowed to even show a coffin, so there were huge parades of protesters with cardboard coffins, flag-draped coffins, and they were rounding people up and they were locking them in places, and people were getting their arms dislocated and broken by these plastic handcuffs, being thrown in basically snow fencing to herd them, and this all in a country where every single person who can hear what you're talking about, what I'm talking about, is saying, that stuff doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. This is the United States of America. I just beat my hand on the thing. I don't know if you can hear it. But this is the United States of America. This doesn't happen here. They're making that up. And the denial that goes along with having to believe that everything you're suffering for right now because your money, your wages are crap, and that poor McDonald's worker who passed out because there was no air conditioning, and this is the stuff we're supposed to be tolerating now, that all that comes unglued if anyone believes a word you say or a word I say about how people are treated when they stand up for themselves or for the other things that they believe in. And to bring it back to Trayvon, I honestly believe when the president said, that could have been me 35 years ago, the real message is, you can be Trayvon now. You can be Trayvon right now if you actually stand up for the stuff that got you elected. And I think...
You're talking about the president.
I'm talking about the president, yeah. And every one of us. If we all stand up for what we believe in, if we stand up for good, decent, middle-class jobs, if we stand up for people to have the appropriate treatment in the workplace, if we stand up for health care, if we stand up for pensions, if we stand up for peace, if we say we don't want a drone bomb, if the president stopped drone bombing or opened gates at Gitmo, I think the message is, we could have a lot more Trayvons. And that's, I think, a frightening, horrifying reality. But to think that the only kids that matter that are dead kids are the ones in other countries, that's the biggest delusion we are facing right now. And, this is a great Friday night buzzkill, but that's the thing that's making me so sad about this, is we really need to take this all back and say, no, you can't have open season on young people. And if we stopped killing, no more 17-year-olds die, whether they're here or they're in Pakistan. No more.
Could I say that, and I'm not defending the president, and I will make a judicious a call about, I did not witness the speech. I did read that it's been posted on Facebook. And I am very proud to say the president made his decision and announced to the world that he wanted to be president in the city I grew up in, Springfield, Illinois, mm-hmm. right on the corner where Abraham Lincoln struggled against slavery as a young state congressman in Springfield. And, you know, that one thing about I would say, and I'm not in favor of the drone strikes per se, but I would just say, having been a Marine and having friends that wore uniforms for practically careers, that citizenship now, maybe I'm miswording it as overly aggressive, but citizenship is now being used as a bit of a tool against our own citizens, possibly.
Yes, I agree.
And I would share, Pat, with the listeners, won't come to a surprise to yourself, I do believe that the Saudi Arabian government issues its own American visas to their own citizens to come to the United States. I'm not pointing fingers to any other country. Don't know that they'd be the only ones. My thing, I just wanted to get out, because I know you don't have a whole lot of time with your professional people calling in, is that having been a commissioned police officer in the state of Florida, having graduated from an academy of 6 months of training, that one thing that law enforcement is one thing that's emphasized in academies are your constitutional rights and the laws. We studied Florida state statutes as well as the Constitution, and also the abridgment of the two subjects is where laws can be interpreted into it. It's not law school, but it really dignifies the legitimacy of an American citizen and how important your use of deadly force is and knowing your rights. And one thing that many citizens may not realize, that when you arrest somebody and you hand the charges over to the Attorney General's office of any state, they can either downgrade the charge or upgrade it. But you make your original provisional arrest based on your subject, and you hand it over to somebody. And they make the final charge or they drop the charge. But one thing I would just say from a tactical standpoint, Pat.
Well, but when the laws have been changed so that what George Zimmerman did is no longer illegal, then the police. Well, that's what happened, right? Stand your ground. You get to chase down somebody till they scare you. I'm gonna follow you five blocks, and I'm gonna knock you down until you scare me, and then I'm gonna have a right to shoot you in the chest. When you make that legal, like I'm reading My Bondage, My Freedom, which is the true story of slavery. Literally, it was almost mandatory for slave owners to beat their slaves. You know, if you didn't beat the slaves and somebody did something, then they knew the slaves at the next plantation were going to start thinking they could get away with something. So it was almost mandatory for torture and beatings. And to think that illegal or legal things can't be wrong. And so that's really the kind
there
of problem,
go.
Is they've made it legal what George Zimmerman did. And so a policeman's hands are then tied, right? Unless he wants to become a vigilante, too.
That's correct. What I think Pat LaMarche is saying is they've made something wrong legal.
Right.
And we as citizens, good, judicious, normal Americans know what's right. I would just say, Pat, from a personal tactical standpoint, if you're in a struggle and you're a uniformed policeman or an announced policeman, one of the things that Zimmerman did not do is apparently he didn't announce or communicate or make appropriate communication with Trayvon, from what I can tell. The another thing, he has no uniform, and actually he didn't have any authority. Now, apparently the homeowners in the state of Florida, because of the propensity for guns here in the state, they do allow a homeowner volunteer, or not homeowners, but your home association volunteer watch people to be armed. It's technically was legal. I did not know that. And people that are saying that there was not a stand your ground element to the case, in fact, that there was concerning the manslaughter charge. I'm no expert on the law. I don't know the law at all. I just go with my instincts about our American history. From a tactical standpoint, Pat, I thought you might appreciate, if you're in a struggle with somebody as a uniformed policeman and you have a weapon and they don't, if a weapon is brandished as a uniformed policeman, you don't automatically, you're not entitled to deadly force.
You just don't discharge it, yeah.
Right, yeah. And actually the weapon, from a combat perspective, you know, having guarded U.S. embassies, been through some professional academies, if you were at a disadvantage in a fight that you started because you shouldn't have followed somebody, that weapon could have been used as a blunt object. Mm-hmm. And actually, you could have struck the individual to get him off of you and not had to shoot somebody. Now, a lot of people say, well, couldn't he have shot somewhere else or shot in the air? And actually, that could also have been used. Now, that's not taught in
academy. Or he could have shot in the air like the black woman who shot in the air over her husband's head and is now in prison for 20 years, by the way, because she's black. I mean, and that's the thing that is...
Better believe it.
And that's the thing that's a shame, is if I say that, then I'm calling every white person a racist. Of course that's not true. But if I say that, I'm just saying it's the truth.
Well, I mean, how much time did Michael Vick
yeah.
serve fighting dogs, and how much time is Zimmerman serving for shooting a human being in the heart, by the way?
I'm fascinated to see what happens to his wife now. They put off her perjury trial till after this trial. I am fascinated to see what happens to that now. You know, I'm going to probably have to get therapy about this, because I accumulate a certain amount of disgust, and just like those guys who fight for their country, I feel like I'm fighting for my country every day because I love my country and I don't want it to suck anymore. I want it to be a better place. I want it to be a place where I can be proud of the fact that my children live here and my children are contributing to it. And so I stick up for what I believe in, because I think the United States can be really the light and shining light on a hill. And all,
better believe it.
And all we've done is shoot our own feet off.
You know, Pat, I've been all over the country, and I'm actually scheduled to go to work in Minnesota on a union project coming up here. But I've worked in California. I've served in Korea, to Norway on operations. I've served in Central and South America as a Marine. And what happens in the United States is really it takes the courage of women like yourself and men like myself standing up, because a strong American or strong Americans really are the role models to the world, not to look up to the United States, but what happens here in our country becomes a reflection around mm-hmm, the world mm-hmm. in many regards.
Yeah.
And the courage that it takes. That it takes to be a good American really not only helps our own citizens, but it helps the world realize that they can too live in harmony with people from all around the world.
Exactly.
And I totally agree with you. And it takes physical courage to stand up here in the United States. And it's unfortunate. I would not think that getting back to the process, I wouldn't think that expressing the so-called freedom of speech was such a threat to anyone, but apparently it is perceived as one.
Yeah. Well, that maybe that'll be the next stand their ground. They said something that irritated me. Hey, Mark, we're going to have to take a break because we've got to come back with Ron Troer, but thanks an awful lot for calling in.
Well, Pat, thank you, and I would just say, if you don't mind, that the Stand Your Ground laws here in Florida were totally sponsored by the National Rifle Association.
Mm-hmm.
They have a strong corporate agenda, and they're tied into the Koch brothers,
mm-hmm.
and that's the Koch brothers are also a very anti-union association there. So thanks,
yeah.
Pat.
Yep, take care, Mark. 888-520-7425. Write that number down. We're going to be taking your calls all through the show. I'm Pat LaMarche. I'm filling in for Rick Smith. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. We'll be back with attorney Ron Troro coming right up.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Thursday saw the fourth unity break by Santa Clara County, California employees. Jesse Russell reports.
Power! We got the power!
What kind of power?
Union power!
Who's got the power?
Santa Clara County, California saw a fourth day of action by workers who are demanding a fair contract that supports public services and the community. SEIU Local 521 has been organizing Unity Breaks, where county employees don purple shirts, chant, sing, and take turns explaining why they're part of the union and are seeking a fair contract.
And it's important. and stand strong against the county not willing to make us a cutting edge force. So what we're going to say?
No!
Unions also fight for higher wages, which translates to higher wages for all Americans. Strong. We need to be active. We need to be participating. We need to be educated and inform our family and our friends that we want this not just for us, but for everybody. Everybody wins when we're in a union.
The county contract expires on July 23rd.
Presidents of three unions are calling on House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid to fix the Affordable Care Act's impact on union health care plans. James Hoffa of the Teamsters, Joe Hansen of the United Food and Commercial Workers, and Unite Here President D. Taylor all express deep concern over the impact the Affordable Care Act is going to have. The union leaders say without an equitable fix, the health care reform will shatter not only hard-earned union health benefits, but the very foundation of the basic 40-hour work week. The union presidents say their concerns so far have been met with a stone wall at the White House. Among their concerns are that the health care reform law creates perverse incentives that include an incentive for employers to keep work hours limited to 30 hours per week. They also say nonprofit health care plans operated jointly by employers and unions under the Taft-Hartley Act are threatened because union employees will be treated differently when it comes to insurance subsidies. The union leaders say common sense corrections can be made to how the law is interpreted, but time is running out to fix it. A Florida group called Dream Defenders is protesting the Trayvon Martin verdict at Florida's Capitol and Governor's office. They say they won't leave until the governor calls a special session of the legislature to address the environment that killed Trayvon Martin. The Dream Defenders' agenda is to repeal Florida's Stand Your Ground law, to end racial profiling, and to abolish what they call school-to-prison education policies.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
I hope you're not taking that sanity thing too literally. Rick's off tonight. I'm Pat LaMarche to give you all the sanity I can muster, but it is 3 hours long, the program. Right now, joining me, a wonderful guy, wicked smart. I almost hate interviewing him because he's so smart that I'm like, okay, I got to keep up. Ron Truro, attorney in here in Cumberland County, Pennsylvania, and a juvenile advocate. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Rick Smith Show.
Thank you, Pat. Looking forward to having the conversation with you.
Yeah, we were obviously talking about this for the last half hour, and we'll probably talk about it most of the night. But the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman trial, the verdict came down a week ago tomorrow now, and as that news clip just said, there are people occupying the state house in Florida. They want some change to the climate down there. Was it legal for George Zimmerman to put a gun against Trayvon's chest and blow it out?
You know, to be honest with you, Pat, I don't think that's the question that needs to be addressed. I'll be honest with you. I didn't follow this case very closely because it really has such little effect on me and my practice and my clients here in Cumberland County. We don't have the same sort of law that Florida has. And I guess the only thing I can say is in analyzing this verdict, the best I can tell, the jury determined that this was a clear case of self-defense as opposed to any issue of stand your ground or the castle doctrine, which we have in Pennsylvania. So, you know, it really is talking apples and oranges. I don't think that's what we want to do. We want to talk about what's relevant to people here in central Pennsylvania.
Well,
and, I mean, I just put that out to begin with because our law is a little different apparently, but it's also extremely important to understand
what our law is
and what we do.
Yeah. I do want to get into that castle doctrine. I also want to let people know no one's shooting at us. It's Harrisburg and there's a ball game and those are fireworks if people can hear them, but it sounds like they're battering down the barricade here. But it's a beautiful night out, and thank goodness for that rain. Cooled things off about 15 degrees. But so what is this castle doctrine?
Well, The Castle Doctrine has been in the common law for, you know, 1,000 years. It's very simple. People in their own homes have an expectation of privacy, security, and if somebody enters your home for whatever reason and they're not an invited guest, if you feel threatened, if you feel that you need to protect your home, the people within it, your property, you basically have a right to use whatever force you feel necessary at the time to use to protect yourself. I mean, I can't even imagine how I would feel if I woke up in the middle of the night, all of a sudden somebody's standing over me.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I want to do is start analyzing, okay, does this person have a deadly weapon? Is this person going to hurt me or my family? Is this person a threat? So the Castle Doctrine, which, by the way, was recently, as you know, expanded in Pennsylvania, under the auspices, direction, and advice of the Pennsylvania District Attorneys Association, basically says that if you're in your home and someone enters it, you can use whatever force is necessary to protect yourself. And that's a good thing. I mean, no one should feel that they can't be in their home in a situation that, you know, they're subject to an intruder and to, again, force a homeowner that to analyze what they're faced with is ludicrous.
Well, but that's, and I mean, I'm the type of person who, I remember my mother told me one time I should get a baseball bat because I was a single mom with two little kids. I'm like, the first thing that's going to happen is someone's going to take the baseball bat away from me and beat me with it. You know, I mean, all I'm doing is arming them I had a baseball bat.
That may be true, but again, that's not the issue. The issue is, do we, as a matter of public policy, want to allow people to feel safe in their own homes? And I think the answer is yes. And I will tell you that there have been cases in Cumberland County and even other adjoining counties where district attorneys have essentially not charged homeowners when they have used deadly force against people that have entered their homes.
Now, we just had a former Miami police officer call in, and he was also a member of the United States military, former Marine. I guess you're always a Marine. But he called in, and he said that, you know, protocol for a law enforcement officer is obviously different from a protocol for a regular person who's just, as you say, in your home or whatever. But you would at least announce that you have a gun. This law doesn't require any of that. It just says if you're threatened or you feel frightened, you can discharge your weapon.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I challenge you to find a whole lot of people in Cumberland County that disagree with that concept.
Now,
I mean, this is again, and I also want to say I listened to a little bit of your last interview, and I was actually sort of amused because, you know, I realized you're all fired up about the racial issue, but in Cumberland County, that's not what we're dealing with. This is not a
right. And well, I was just about to ask that question. The case of the woman who shot over the head of her abusive husband and went to jail for 20 years.
No, I don't know that case, so I really can't.
Well, does anything like that happen in the Commonwealth? Is there a point where, sure, you can stand your ground or you can have your Castle Doctrine unless we don't like you? Which is what, clearly, I mean, this woman was in her home, shot over the head of this guy who came into her home. She had a restraining order against him. She went to jail for discharging a weapon. She didn't even hit the guy.
Well, again, I don't know the facts of that case. If a little bit of facts that you just gave me are true, I would be surprised at that because, you know, the statutory language that was passed, and again,
and that was again in Florida. That was not in Pennsylvania.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, in Pennsylvania, if somebody comes into your home and they don't have a right to be there, you can use deadly force because it's your home, it's your castle, and they shouldn't be there. I mean, why is somebody coming into your home that has no right to be in your home? You know, that's the whole point. Is this is about personal safety?
Personal safety. I understand.
And again. Who, I can tell you, I've lived in Cumberland County pretty much all my life. There are very few people in Cumberland County that would disagree with that notion.
Yeah, and I'm not asking anyone to disagree with that notion, but the ALEC playbook has been out for a while, and 20-something states have passed this Stand Your Ground bill since it was produced with the Koch brothers and the NRA. And that money is what paid for George Zimmerman's defense. So is there a possibility, I mean, George Zimmerman, volunteer watch guy, all of a sudden has a $1 million lawyer and a $1 million defense paid for by very special interest. Is there something, a force that could bring that kind of law to the Commonwealth, bring that kind of muscle behind that kind of law?
I think that we have an extremely strong and commonsensical law. It was developed with the assistance of the Pennsylvania District Attorney's Association. Mm-hmm. They are one of the most powerful advocates for criminal laws in Harrisburg.
So you don't see a Stand Your Ground kind of law having the potential to be passed in Pennsylvania?
Well, we have a Stand Your Ground law. I mean, we and again, it was developed.
But that's only if you're inside your home.
No. Okay. That's not true. In your workplace, in a place that you have a lawful right to be, in your car. I mean, what you ought to do sometime is actually read the law, and you'll find that it has.
That's why I interview you.
I understand that, but I encourage you and other people to actually read the law, because when you read it and you go through this, and I'm actually looking at it right now, and it's under a section of our statutory language that's called use of force in self-protection. And what it's doing is it's developing a scenario where people can use force to protect themselves, their families, their property, and it goes through a whole scenario of situations when you can, when you can't. The thing that's sort of amazing about it is as I even read as a lawyer, and I read this thing, there's a section called limitations on justifying the necessity for use of force. There's also exceptions for using it. The point of this is very simple. No ordinary citizen would ever be so versed in this law that they would sit around and analyze, okay, mm-hmm. this person is now approaching me. Now, as I recall from Section 505, I can do this. Like, you can't. I mean,
But there are people, and there was a case I just listened to, and we'll play it a little bit later on. I just listened to the audio tape of a 911 call where a gentleman said, there's somebody breaking into the house next door, and the 911 operator said, stay in your house, we'll send somebody. And he said, no, I'm loading my gun and going over there. And he said, I know the law. I know I can do this. And he got off. He actually went to the neighbor's house and killed the intruders. Nobody was home. And so the people do know that it's
Pennsylvania.
Still, no, that was in Texas.
I resist the attempt to analyze our legal situation against Texas, Florida, whatever. Everybody has different set of laws,
I want to know is if your kid was vacationing in, well, your kid's plenty capable of defending himself, but if your kid was vacationing in one of these states, would you be alarmed that somebody could say, I was threatened by him on the street, he was unarmed, I felt threatened, I felt afraid, I shot him?
Well, you know, of course I would be if that was the situation, but again, the point of this, and this is, again, this is why we have to go back. We have a legal system that rests on the decision of jurors. Florida has an interesting situation where they impaneled six jurors, mm-hmm. six women. I don't know what the racial makeup of that jury was, but it is irrelevant to me.
Yeah, it was six white women.
Six women, though. Six women heard that case from start to finish. Listened to the instructions of the female judge and made a decision that this guy used self-defense justifiably. Mm. Were they wrong? I don't know, but they made a decision. And you know what? One of the beauties of our system is we accept the decision of a jury and we move on. So,
well, we accept this. And I just would say that, you know, I could pull up a website right now with the number of people who have been exonerated by DNA evidence after a jury found them guilty. You know,
right, well,
the
jury found them not guilty, so it's not a problem. They made a decision.
But you know what I'm saying? I mean, juries get it wrong.
Times, rarely, but I think they do occasionally. I mean, my experience for all the jury trials I've handled, I must say that for the most part, they get it right. Now, again, my experience is primarily here in Cumberland County. We have an extraordinarily wonderful legal system, and you know, I say that as a defense lawyer, where mm-hmm. my clients are charged with crimes all the time. But mm-hmm. but the point is, we get it right because we try very hard to do the right thing. And as I said, this particular extension of the Castle Doctrine is the number of cases that are ever going to fall under that are so few.
So we just have like 30 seconds left. Can you just tell us how far does that Castle Doctrine expand to your? It goes to your workplace, you said, to
yes.
your car,
yes,
to a public
yes.
park,
to a place that you have a right to be, but. Then it really falls back into the normal, the traditional concepts of self-defense.
Mm.
You have a right to defend yourself to the level of the force that's being brought against you. So that's not anything particularly new and exciting.
That's interesting. So could this be used by people in a gang who said, I felt threatened by that other guy?
Possibly. Mm. I mean, anything's possible. I mean, the law has so many permutations that, you know, so yeah, I mean, I can't say that it couldn't,
mm-hmm.
but again, our district attorneys are pretty smart guys, and they're not just saying, oh, we're going to throw those charges out, unless they feel that under all the circumstances, it's the right thing to do.
Ron Truro, thank you so much for taking your time tonight.
No problem. Glad to talk to you, Pat.
Yep.
Take care.
Hope to see you
Bye.
Soon. Ron Truro, defense attorney and juvenile advocate in Cumberland County. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more of The Rick Smith Show.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Stop paying high interest rates for the promise of small rewards. Get the PSECU Visa card instead. No games, no gimmicks. Just a low 9.9 annual percentage rate. Then get the greatest reward of all, paying less for the things you want. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit psecu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Is it just me, or has American politics regressed from its normal abnormal to become full-blown wacky? So many politicos these days seem off the wall, personally peculiar, and, dare I say it, queer. Not if Representative Daryl Metcalf is within earshot. He gets spooked by such talk. A raging homophobe, this Republican legislator in Pennsylvania blocked a gay colleague from delivering a speech on the House floor about the Supreme Court's June decisions on same-sex marriage. Darrell, the self-appointed sheriff of permissible speech, literally shut off the gay legislator's intended comments. He had to, Darrell blathered, because the speech would have been just open rebellion against what God has said and just open rebellion against God's law. Imagine how pleased God must be to have Darrell translating for him. Or is it her? Whatever. Let's move on to Texas, where U.S. Representative Michael Burgess is always full of little-known scientific facts about abortion. For example, to explain his support of an extremist bill to ban mothers from having any choice of abortion after the 20th week of pregnancy, Burgess revealed that even the teeny tiniest of fetuses feel pain, for he knows they feel pleasure. How does he know that? Because he claims to have seen sonograms of 15-week-old boy fetuses trying to masturbate. I have to ask, don't our privacy laws protect fetuses from peeping toms? And shouldn't you have to have an IQ above room temperature to serve in Congress? This is Jim Hightower saying, but such a standard could eliminate all the amusement value in American politics, including this guy, who recently declared, "Everybody tells me, please run for president." Yes, that's the Donald, Donnie Trump, still babbling about his favorite topic, himself. Every circus needs a clown, so run, Donnie, run!
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Rebuilding America. The Rick Smith Show.
Thanks to Ron Ferraro, and I appreciate his scholarly contribution. I will bet my last paycheck, though, that gang members don't get away with saying that I felt scared when they pop each other. I'm just thinking. They go to jail. Anyway, this is, when I was talking to Ron, I was talking about the audio of a guy who decided that he was going to leave with his gun from his house and shoot the guy at the next house, who was robbing the palace. Two people were home invaders. When they came out, he went over and shot him, even though the 911 guy told him not to go there. And a little, like, goofy clip that starts this, and then it goes to that. So let's just take a listen to this.
Hi there, gun lovers and soon-to-be gun lovers. Shoot 'em up Charlie here to tell you how we got George Zimmerman off the hook. As much as I'd like to, I can't take all the credit. It's the NRA and ALEC who laid the groundwork. They've specialized in getting shoot-'em-up-friendly laws passed all across the country. See, the law in Florida is an awful lot like the model legislation distributed by ALEC and passed in 26 states, which is an awful lot like the jury instructions in the Zimmerman trial. These stand-your-ground, shoot-'em-up-friendly laws let you shoot someone if you kind of reasonably feel you might sort of be in danger, even if you created your own danger by seeking it out. Which makes it the victim's fault for scaring you, and gives more rights to the person with the gun. So, we plan on expanding these laws to give more protections and benefits to gun owners everywhere. Tired of long lines at the DMV? First in line gun laws will allow you and your gun to move to the head of the line and be on your way faster. Guns on the go legislation will let you breeze through toll booths, unmolested and with rights intact. Right to feast laws will guarantee you an unlimited food supply. And bullet banking legislation will end your financial worries, giving you more time for your Second Amendment rights. So whether you're shooting kids on your porch or screaming at the 911 dispatcher about your new rights, Shoot 'em up Charlie and the NRA are here to make shooting easier.
Here's my case. Here's the clip.
The officer's coming out there. I don't want you to go outside that house. And I don't want you to have that gun in your hand when those officers are poking around over there.
I understand that. But I have a right to protect myself too, sir. And
yes,
you understand
you
that.
Yes,
and the laws
do.
Have been changed in this country since September the 1st. And you know it and I know it.
I
have a right to protect myself.
I'm right there.
And a shotgun is a legal weapon. It's not an illegal weapon.
No, it's not. I'm not saying that. I'm
all right.
Not wanting you to, you know.
Okay, he's coming out the window right now. I got to go, buddy. I'm sorry, but he's coming out the window.
Don't.
Out a neighbor's window.
Mr. Horn.
God damn it. They just stole something. I'm going out the window.
Don't.
I'm sorry. I ain't letting them get away with it. They stole something. They got a bag of something.
The house.
I'm doing it.
Mr. Horn, do not
I'm sorry.
Go outside the house.
This ain't right, buddy.
You're going to get yourself shot if you go outside that house with a gun.
You want to make a bet?
What do you think? Okay, stay in the house.
They're what getting away.
That's all right. Property's not worth killing someone over. Okay?
God damn it.
Don't go out the house. Don't be shooting nobody. I know you're pissed and you're frustrated, but don't do it.
They got a bag of loot.
Okay. How big is the bag? They're carrying
a
bag
of
stuff. They're walking out of the hand.
Yeah.
Which way are they going?
I can't. I'm going outside. I'll find out.
I don't want you going outside, Mr. Horn.
Well, here it goes, buddy. You hear the shotgun clicking, and I'm going.
Don't go outside.
Oh, that shotgun clicking. Now, this is upsetting. You're going to hear him kill these people.
You're good.
That is justice in the United States of America. Joe Horn went out of his home, chased down guys that were not even ever in his home. And he knew the law. He knew the law had been passed that allowed him to consider himself in a threat, even though he wasn't threatened. And he shot and killed both of the burglars, later cleared of all charges by a grand jury. The Tampa Bay Times reports that over 200 cases have involved stand your ground laws in Florida since 2005. This is a plan to get this legislation passed. And my dear friend Brett, who's 10 times smarter than I am, also, I am on the air, everybody else I know is smarter, but he was telling me off air that the whole Castle Doctrine law was vetoed twice prior to Governor Corbett coming in, and one of the very first things he did was sign the Stand Your Ground, I mean, not Stand Your Ground, excuse me, the Castle Doctrine, so that people could shoot somebody if they came in their house. And the other thing that Ron said that I thought was interesting was you have to use a force equal to the force used against you, or you're supposed to use a force equal to the force used against you. If that were true for Zimmerman, he would have had to just settle for the old fisticuffs. And I don't know how you brought your child up, but if somebody's walking down the street and someone's following you in their car, and you're walking and they're following you, and you're walking and they're following you, and then they get out of their car and they keep following you, and you're walking and they decide to approach you, have you brought your kid up to say, yes, massa, I'll get out of your way. I'm sorry. I know I don't belong in this neighborhood. Even though my father's girlfriend lives here and we're staying there tonight, of course he belonged in that neighborhood. Did you teach your child to say, I don't belong here. I don't know what I'm doing here. I guess I'll run along. I'm sorry to have bothered you by being here. I'm sorry I don't look like I belong here. No, you didn't. You taught your kid to say, get away from me, you creep. What's wrong with you? And that's what you should say. Get away from me, you creep. And when it's all over, I'm going to send warm thoughts to you so that you'll be a little less paranoid and creepy. But in the meantime, that's what you are. Anyway, I'm Pat LaMarche. I'm filling in for Rick Smith on The Rick Smith Show. This is where working people come to talk. When we get back, we're going to talk about poverty and homelessness with a hero of mine, Diane Nyland. We'll be right back on The Rick Smith Show.
To the Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to the Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Thursday saw the fourth unity break by Santa Clara County, California employees. Jesse Russell reports.
The power! We got the power!
What kind of power?
You get power!
Who's got the power?
Santa Clara County, California saw a fourth day of action by workers who are demanding a fair contract that supports public services and the community. SEIU Local 521 has been organizing Unity Breaks, where county employees don purple shirts, chant, sing, and take turns explaining why they're part of the union and are seeking a fair contract.
And it's important that as a union we stand unified and stand strong against the county not willing to make us a cutting-edge workforce. So what we're going to say?
No!
Unions also fight for higher wages, which translates to higher wages for all Americans. We need to keep our unions strong. We need to be active. We educated. We need to be educated and inform our family and our friends that we want this not just for us, but for everybody. Everybody wins when we're in a union.
The county contract expires on July 23rd.
Presidents of three unions are calling on House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid to fix the Affordable Care Act's impact on union health care plans. James Hoffa of the Teamsters, Joe Hansen of the United Food and Commercial Workers, and Unite Here President Dee Taylor all expressed deep concern over the impact the Affordable Care Act is going to have. The union leaders say without an equitable fix, the health care reform will shatter not only hard-earned union health benefits, but the very foundation of the basic 40-hour work week. The union presidents say their concerns so far have been met with a stone wall at the White House. Among their concerns are that the health care reform law creates perverse incentives that include an incentive for employers to keep work hours limited to 30 hours per week. They also say nonprofit health care plans operated jointly by employers and unions under the Taft-Hartley Act are threatened because union employees will be treated differently when it comes to insurance subsidies. The union leaders say common sense corrections can be made to how the law is interpreted, but time is running out to fix it. A Florida group called Dream Defenders is protesting the Trayvon Martin verdict at Florida's Capitol and governor's office. They say they won't leave until the governor calls a special session of the legislature to address the environment that killed Trayvon Martin. The Dream Defenders' agenda is to repeal Florida's Stand Your Ground law, to end racial profiling, and to abolish what they call school-to-prison education policies.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Don't you know?
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around, waiting for a promotion. Don't you know? Talking about it.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. This is Pat LaMarche. I'm filling in for Rick Smith, who's getting a well-deserved night off. Oh, my goodness, what a wild, incredible trip we all took together. Brett, the producer, is over there, also deserving a night off, but not getting one. And me, I'm Pat LaMarche, filling in for Rick while he's off. And with me, talking about a revolution, my favorite revolutionary, my favorite shero, Diane Nyland, welcome back. Well, welcome. You haven't been on the Rick Smith program before, so welcome.
I have not. So this is a pure welcome with red carpet, right?
Yes, and we're on that. Your beautiful voice is going to be heard in Washington, D.C. Just picked up a new affiliate in Washington, D.C., carrying the show, which is huge and wonderful and fabulous. So now Central Pennsylvania. Spotted all over the internet, of course, and then broadcast also in D.C. Pretty stupendous.
Well, it's so great to catch up with you again.
Yeah, now Diane Nyland is the executive director and founder of Hear Us, which is an advocacy group for homeless children. And Diane, tell us a little bit about Hear Us and what your goal is, and then we can chat about the trouble we've made over the years. But
well, yeah, certainly we need to talk about the trouble, but for the past 8 years, I've been on the road traveling around the country in a motorhome, much like the great group from your little gang there. And I've been filming documentaries of letting homeless kids talk about what it's like to be homeless and putting them together and getting the videos out in all over the country so that people can understand that, oh my gosh, kids are homeless. And I'm actually starting my ninth year of travel.
Wow.
And we'll just look forward to some really awesome opportunities in the next few months.
Now, I have been in your mobile home with you on a couple of these trips, and it's been a wonderful ride. It's been a great, just an amazing thing to be able to work with you on these projects, trying to lend some voice to the folks who are Well, quite frankly, I don't think people want to forget them. I just think that everybody's life is so busy that it's easier to forget. It's also kind of overwhelming to think of the scope and the size of the problem. I mean, even our federal government can't get their hands around how big the problem is.
But
I just really wasn't prepared for a mobile home with seven people in it.
Well, you know, the mobile home with seven people in it just didn't make me jealous at all. Although you went to some really great places and it looked like you had a tremendous time and you got just a lot of activity along the way there that I think was very meaningful.
It was definitely different from the trips that we've taken where we've gone and pretty much stayed, except for universities and other places of learning. We've stayed in that poverty neighborhood. And it was interesting because we were in some beautiful homes. We interviewed people, a lot of people right in their homes. We interviewed a lot of folks in their union halls or in their job location. Excuse me. And I think with the exception of Blair, West Virginia, which was being dismantled practically around our ears by people who wanted to blow Blair Mountain up, so they want the town to go away, we really didn't see anything but a certain level of middle-class comfort, and that's because these people have middle-class jobs.
Are there still middle-class jobs out there?
There are. Well, 7% of the jobs right now in the United States are union jobs. And, you know, we interviewed some great people in Las Vegas. We interviewed some incredible people that said, I am not going to apologize for wanting to make $40,000 a year.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The CEO of a company makes $43 million. I am not going to apologize.
I think we should be pretty well done with apologizing for that kind of stuff, but that's me.
Yeah. But unfortunately, people still are. People are still getting put with their back up against the boards because they want a decent wage. And later on today, we're going to talk with some folks from Chicago, a gentleman who's a 8th or 9th grade teacher there who was one of the 2,000 educators who lost their job today.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a lot more of that coming up just right around the corner, too.
Pretty awful. So what does that mean for the homeless issue? I mean, as people lose these middle-class jobs, and I personally never had a person with a union job in a homeless shelter that I ever came into contact with. I mean, these are people working at McDonald's and fast food places and power retailers that end up in homeless shelters.
You mean like the subsidized jobs, the ones that we taxpayers are subsidizing?
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, that is a funny thing about jobs that have, paid a living wage in the past that are no longer. And I certainly see those folks as being on the fast track to homelessness. And actually, the PBS show that documentary that just ran last week, two American families, really covers the loss of the union wages back in the, these families lost their jobs in Milwaukee, both union workers, back in the early 90s. And, you know, this whole film, as I watched it, I just found myself going, yeah, I remember what I was thinking then when I was running a shelter, and this is really painful validation because the all of the stories, I mean, it just really unfolded the way we knew that they were going to.
People being blamed for their poverty.
Yeah.
It's such a fascinating thing, but it's everywhere. Why do people blame? I mean, even other poor people blame poor people for being poor.
I know. There's so much anger and so much hatred that's just being fueled by all of this. And, you know, you throw a few nasty, you know, not you, nasty radio people in there, it's... Yeah, just wanted to make sure I wasn't talking about you. But it's, you know, you just see how, you know, it's the kick the dog mentality, I think. And it's, I think that's what we're seeing a lot of.
Well, they definitely throw the chum in the water.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah, and it doesn't take much either.
You've got a bunch of people who want to know why life is sucking for them right now. And then they're thinking, well, it can't be my employer. It can't be. They've got to know they need me. They've got to know that without me, the lights aren't on, the floor isn't swept, the accounting doesn't get done. They've got to know that without me, they're nothing. So it must be this other person. I wrote a Huffington Post today about the mortgage deduction. And we have two United States senators who are making a lot of noise right now. Orrin Hatch and Baucus are making a lot of noise right now, saying that they will rewrite the entire tax code if somebody just wants to come on board and come up with some good ideas. And so the Housing Alliance of Pennsylvania said, we've got an idea. How about the mortgage deduction? Not so much anymore for people with million-dollar homes.
That would be maybe one area where you could do a little pinching and it's not going to hurt them that much.
And they propose that right now the ceiling, your mortgage ceiling, to still get the deduction is $1 million. Now, this is a subsidy. These are housing subsidies. People talk about poor people getting a housing subsidy. This is a person with a $1 million mortgage, not a $1 million home.
No. Million-dollar mortgage. And those little million-dollar mortgages are on some of these humongous mansions that I've seen driving around. And you just kind of go, first of all, how do you need that much space? But secondly, why are we subsidizing your mortgage?
Right. And because it's a deduction, unless you have itemized deductions, you don't qualify for it.
Yeah.
So that means what the other thing that the Housing Alliance of Pennsylvania said is what we'd really love to have is we'd like to have this be just a flat-out tax credit.
Yeah.
Everybody under $500,000 gets the tax credit for their mortgage payment, their mortgage interest, and no more deduction to get it so that everybody can get it, because 77% of the people benefiting from the mortgage deduction make over $100,000 a year.
So those would be the people that actually a few more dollars in their pockets might mean something to them?
Absolutely. Can you imagine? I looked it up on CNN. They have a worksheet, I guess. You can plug numbers in, and then the computer does the thought process for you.
Uh-huh.
Just so helpful. And a person making $34,000 a year can afford, on average, a $67,000 mortgage.
Okay.
Well, if that person gets $1,800, that's going to make a big difference.
$1,800 would probably put them in a higher tax bracket.
It certainly would buy an awful lot of sneakers and shirts and things that the kids that live in the little house might need, books and things like that. It just seems awfully difficult. So where are you, Diane? Are you in Illinois right now?
I'm in Illinois right now. I'm going to make a quick little trip to North Carolina, and then I'll be back to get ready for the big trip.
The big Texas trip?
The big Texas trip. Now, you know how big Texas is, right?
Yes, because you took me right across the widest part of it.
Yeah, so I'm going to get to spend a good 6-7 weeks in Texas, in probably some of the hottest months.
Yeah,
September and October.
It's good to remember what it's like to be homeless when you're trying to get cooled off. What is the project you're working on in Texas?
Well, it's actually a very exciting project, and the more I talk to people in Texas, the more excited I get. A lot of people don't know that the most homelessness that families experience is being doubled up. They lose their housing, they move in with somebody, and they kind of start bouncing around from friend to family member and try to stay, you know, out of the way of landlords. And so they're doubled up, they're highly mobile, and it's just really a brutal way for most families to live. It's really, really hard. And so the Texas Homeless Education Office and other folks down there have figured out that if we get a film to let people see what doubled up really means and to hear from those who are doubled up, that it would go a long way to easing some of the issues in the schools where, you know, some enlightened educators might say, well, you're not doubled up, you're staying with somebody.
Right.
And, you know, not realizing the difference between casually staying with somebody and desperately staying with somebody.
As someone who's casually stayed with somebody, after 2 weeks, there's nothing casual left about it.
Yeah. And then, you know, it is. It's just, you know, when you start explaining it to people, then they get it. But really, the best people that do the explanation and show and tell are the people living in that situation. And so I'm going to do some filming across the state and really try to give a broad scope of you know, the geographic and the just really every way that we can look at that to create some powerful visual images to convey the reality of Double Dog.
You know, and as I try to say fairly often, it's not most people's fault that they don't know what it's like for someone who's living a situation that you've never lived. You know, so if you don't know what it's like to live doubled up, don't pick on yourself. You know? Just learn. That's the fun thing about your films is you don't need to pick on yourself. You can just learn. Although I did show one of your, I showed My Own Four Walls, which is my favorite, it's a film where the whole story is told by homeless children. There's no adult narrator. The kids just tell what their lives are like. And I showed it to Shippensburg High School a couple of months ago. And, you know, people cry. And,
well, yeah,
that's it. Yeah, and it's like, okay, don't pick on yourself because you didn't know that's how sad it is. Be proud of yourself because you're going to watch this video. And your videos are available at hearus.us, your website. But I think one of the things that's most interesting for folks who don't know these things is how stupid the system is.
Yeah, my gosh.
First of all, most poor people don't have rich parents. You're not going to say, I'm poor and I just lost my apartment, I'm going to move in with my rich parents. That's not how it happens to most people. You're going to say, I'm going to move in with my poor parents.
Yeah, and it's the poor parents that are living in subsidized housing that end up taking in a family, and then the landlord gets wind of it, and then the family gets evicted, the host family gets evicted, because they have regulations about having people stay too long. And so you just create another whole level of homelessness.
And if the private landlord didn't get sick of you having 15 people take a shower that every day instead of three, then they can rat you out to the federal government, who will throw you all out because that's not a proper use of HUD housing.
Right, exactly. And the HUD housing regulations are geared to really make it more difficult for families in homeless situations to get at least temporary help. I mean, HUD's not funding homeless shelters, so they ought to be doing at least something to ease the homelessness of families. You know, you get families with babies that are out either in the heat, the horrible heat, or in the horrible cold, and you just, you know, have to say, HUD, you know, step up to the plate. If you're not going to make housing available, then, you know, if no shelters are available, then make some housing available. And it's just not happening that way.
I went to a meeting a couple of weeks ago about this housing issue, and of course HUD has been cut by the sequester, along with the other federal programs cut by the sequester. And one of the things I learned at that program was if they completely eliminated HUD, if they just eliminated it, and it's limited amount that it does, and none of us think that they do enough at Health and Human Services or at HUD, but if they eliminate it completely, it's only 3% of the budget.
Yeah.
So cutting something that's already not got enough money.
Yeah.
You know, it's so crazy. And if they were air traffic controllers, they wouldn't be cut. They'd fix that pronto tanto.
Yeah, and, you know, people hear a sequester and kind of give a big yawn unless it's really hitting them. And they don't realize that, you know, there's families that are homeless that are not getting their housing subsidies to get out of homelessness. And, it's just undermining the whole foundation of this country. Well, we're going ho-hum, and you just kind of have to say that it's going to be way more problematic in the world of homelessness and poverty than we are able to handle.
Biggest division between the haves and the have-nots. I also, when I was doing my research for my story in the Huffington Post today, I saw that half of all taxpayers make $34,000 a year or less.
Yeah.
So, what we've built our revenue system
on? Half.
Diane, real quick, people can watch trailers at your website of your films that you already have out?
Yeah, there's the trailers are right on the homepage there. They can watch it. They can mosey around the website and learn a whole bunch of things. And they can also order the DVDs. They're really great tools. They're loaded with a lot of things on the DVDs, and they're really worthwhile for all kinds of audiences. So that's where they find it, hearus.us.
And if you're one of those folks that we're talking about, if you're one of the people doubled up or living in poverty and homelessness right now, go to Diane's website, because if you have kids, there is a video there that will help you keep your kids in school. You will have every little bit of information you need to have to make sure your child gets an education. So don't be afraid. You don't have to even tell anybody you're homeless. You can just go to the video section of Diane's website, and you can watch it.
Watch it, and if there's any problems or that kind of thing, I can't solve a lot of problems, but keeping the kids in school or getting the kids into school when they're homeless is one that I'm pretty darn good at solving. So if there's any problems, please let me know.
And feel free to call Diane, because there's a law that says they go to school, and, well, quite frankly, Diane helped write it.
Yeah, well, when you help write the law, you kind of feel like it's pretty personal, so. Yeah.
Diane Nyland, I know you took time away from your nephew. You're at the White Sox game.
Yeah, you know what? That was a heat-inspired thing that my nephew's here in town. He loves the Braves, and they're playing the White Sox. And I'm like, I don't know what else we're going to do. So we got here, and I'm going, oh, wait. I've got an obligation tonight. So he's in there watching I think the Braves are winning.
Who's winning?
So,
uh-oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
All right. So that's good. Good for him.
Well,
so.
Get him one of those big spongy number one fingers and tell him we're still number one.
Yeah, I will. And I'm just delighted that we get to chat a little bit, and I will be more than happy someday to see you.
Yes, I'm all excited about joining you in Texas at the end of your big trip. And we're going to make a little nationwide mischief, make a little nationwide trouble. So we'll keep the listeners of the Rick Smith Show up on that. And hopefully some other folks will catch on. And woe to Texas.
The Babes of Wrath will ride again.
That's right. Yeah. I'll have to explain that after the break. Diane Nyland, have fun at the ball game.
Pat LaMarche, you had fun on your radio show. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. This is Pat LaMarche filling in for Rick Smith on The Rick Smith Show, and we'll be right back.
America for the better.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Is it just me, or has American politics regressed from its normal abnormal to become full-blown wacky? So many politicos these days seem off the wall, personally peculiar, and, dare I say it, queer. Not if Representative Daryl Metcalf is within earshot. He gets spooked by such talk. A raging homophobe, this Republican legislator in Pennsylvania blocked a gay colleague from delivering a speech on the House floor about the Supreme Court's June decisions on same-sex marriage. Daryl, the self-appointed sheriff of permissible speech, literally shut off the gay legislator's intended comments. He had to, Daryl blathered, because the speech would have been just open rebellion against what God has said and just open rebellion against God's law. Imagine how pleased God must be to have Daryl translating for him. Or is it her? Whatever. Let's move on to Texas, where U.S. Representative Michael Burgess is always full of little-known scientific facts about abortion. For example, to explain his support of an extremist bill to ban mothers from having any choice of abortion after the 20th week of pregnancy, Burgess revealed that even the teeny tiniest of fetuses feel pain, for he knows they feel pleasure. How does he know that? Because he claims to have seen sonograms of 15-week-old boy fetuses trying to masturbate. I have to ask, don't our privacy laws protect fetuses from peeping toms? And shouldn't you have to have an IQ above room temperature to serve in Congress? This is Jim Hightower saying, but such a standard could eliminate all the amusement value in American politics, including this guy, who recently declared, "Everybody tells me, please run for president." Yes, that's the Donald, Donnie Trump, still babbling about his favorite topic, himself. Every circus needs a clown, so run, Donnie, run!
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
The way to meet this challenge of energy and global climate change is through technology. And the United States is in the lead. The world is on the verge of great breakthroughs that will help us become better stewards of the environment.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. This is Pat LaMarche. I'm filling in. Riding the storm. What a storm that was earlier, huh? And it wasn't just the fireworks after it. It was the thunder boomers and lightning. And lightning that was so bright it lit up a daylight sky. That was crazy stuff. We were just talking with Diane Nyland, wonderful, dear, sweet, fabulous woman, friend of mine, who she and I have taken to the cross-country trips a couple of times, similar to what the Rick Smith Show did last month. And the difference was that the last time we went on a trip, we retraced the steps that the Joads did in the Grapes of Wrath. We did the same steps that they did, and we worked our way out to California on Route 66, what's left of Route 66, and we called ourselves the Babes of Wrath, which is what her reference was at the end of that, when she said goodbye to her fellow Babe of Wrath. It was funny, because at first people were saying they call themselves the Babes of Wrath when they do a news story about us, and then at the end they were just saying we were the Babes of Wrath, as though that were something that existed. But if you're out there working in poverty issues and you don't feel wrath, I just think you're not paying attention. We were talking earlier about the Trayvon Martin case. If you want to weigh in on that, 888-520-7425, 888-520-7425. Let's see if we can get my friend John Atkinson on the radio in a little bit, too, because we would like to talk about the strange weather. Certainly hot weather is not a big surprise for Pennsylvania. What does it mean in the long run? What's hurricane season going to be like? Does day after day after day of 100-degree temperatures make you think that maybe global climate change could be a real thing? Or is that just what you've come to expect for the summertime in central PA? Certainly those heat waves have been hitting everywhere. This story, a little alarming. I don't know if you saw this, Brett. I'm talking to Brett, who can't speak, and so I'll just speak for him. He's saying no. Man dies after winning a beer drinking contest. Joaquin Alcaraz Garcia, won the title of beer drinking champ during a festival in Spain on Wednesday and died 20 minutes later. Alcohol poisoning, people. It's called alcohol poisoning. You're not supposed to drink, what did he have? 6 liters of beer. It's just not good for you. 45-year-old man, not long, very shortly after he finished consuming the beer, he died drinking it. It's a terrible tragedy, but I think people think that you can play little games like that, and alcohol's a drug. It'll kill you. A lot of things going on in the news. The wrong home was demolished in Fort Worth, Texas. The demolition crew went to take this building down, and nobody had a big enough sign on it, I guess. They did know the address, but read the address wrong, and well, they took down the wrong house, and the people who lived there couldn't find their house when they came home. They drove home and searched everywhere in Fort Worth, Texas, looking for the home, and it was confirmed on Monday that the demolition crews leveled the wrong house. The gentleman, Mr. Underwood, said, we came around Silver Creek looking for the lot, and my wife said, David, I think the house is gone. We looked up, and sure enough, it was gone. And the reason I thought this story was interesting, this just happened, is because it happened in Pittsburgh 2 years ago. The wrong man's house was demolished by the city of Pittsburgh. The guy was away on vacation, and when he came home, the Pittsburgh city officials, Andre Hall, got the shock of a lifetime when he came home to Pittsburgh after the holidays and found that the city had demolished his house by accident. I leave for the holidays, come back, and I see a backhoe sitting on my house, he said. City officials confirmed that Hall's house should not have been torn down. This story, 2 years old, contractor, I don't know if they ever heard from the contractor again, who took the wrong house down, but then if they do that sort of thing, then maybe does it make sense that you shoot a guy who shouldn't be shot? The Trayvon Martin case, very upsetting. It's been weighing on my mind for ever since the verdict this past weekend, and actually ever since it happened. Just been such a sad story, and I, of course, can't help but think of the parents. But if you go to the New York Times today, it turns out that there are 20 square blocks of East New York, Brooklyn, where they haven't had a single shooting for 363 days. 363 days without a shooting. This week, 1 year ago, a neighborhood development organization, Man Up, began to send people into the streets to figure out why it was violent and where the violence was going to be next, so they could just sort of hit a pause button, mediate, listen, talk. According to the New York Times, some workers in the project had been street criminals themselves, and others had been victims of violent crime. They'd lost partners or children to it. Althea Collins said, you get tired of going to people's funerals that you grew up with or to their kids' funerals from gun violence in the street. The father of her five children was murdered. She's 43 years old, and she decided to be a part of this. So if Brooklyn, New York can go 363 days without a shooting, and that's the goal they have set in their minds, fewer people shooting, fewer people shot, fewer people done dead or hurt or injured from gun violence, why are 26 states going in the other direction? Stand your ground. You can stand your ground. You don't have to walk away from that altercation. That person scared you or ticked you off. You can kill them. You can shoot them. It's your right. It's your right to shoot them if they made you angry. It's like we've taken an enlightened time and tried to make it unenlightened, except for this little part of New York, where they've gone now 363 days without a single shooting and no killing. No stabbing to kill, no choking to kill, no shooting, no killing in New York City. A lesson to be learned in Sanford, Florida, I believe. It's 34 minutes after the hour. This is the Rick Smith Show. I'm Pat LaMarche. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with you, your calls, and maybe a check of what's happening to the weather around the planet.
We want a glorious war. Or was it a shell game from the master of the cloak and dagger?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Stop paying high interest rates for the promise of small rewards. Get the PSECU Visa card instead. No games, no gimmicks. Just a low 9.9 annual percentage rate. Then get the greatest reward of all, paying less for the things you want. PSECU. Financing life is what we do best.
At PSECU, we've lowered our rates just in time for summer. Get the car you truly want with a 2.99 annual percentage rate. New, used, or simply refinance the car you already have. Choose a payment term of 6 or 7 years, which means more cash in your pocket now. Additional rates and terms are available. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pscu.com/life today.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration. Equal opportunity lender.
Earth, sky.
We don't just live in a spiral galaxy. We live in a barred spiral galaxy.
In other words, our galaxy has a central bar-shaped structure, like a straight stick in the middle, composed of stars. But until recently, scientists didn't know which Milky Way stars are part of the bar. Now, an international team of astronomers says it has found hundreds of stars rapidly moving together in long, looping orbits around the center of our Milky Way. They think these stars are part of the Milky Way's central bar.
These astronomers use data from a large survey project called Apogee, which uses a telescope in New Mexico. The data showed them the velocities of nearly 5,000 stars near the Milky Way's center. A substantial fraction of those stars were moving away from us quickly.
Then they compared these observations with computer models of the Milky Way's central bar. They concluded that the stars they were measuring, those fleeing from Earth, are part of the bar. They said that these stars are in the part of the bar rotating away from our direction in space.
But that's just one side of the bar of the Milky Way center. On the other side of the bar, the stars must be moving toward Earth. The other half of the Milky Way's central bar is visible only from Earth's southern hemisphere. That's why these astronomers plan to use a telescope in Chile to observe the rest of the inner Milky Way, beginning in 2014. We have more at EarthSky.org. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
How do we explain the heat? One word, summer.
This is Pat Lamar spilling in for Rick Smith. Welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We were sweltering, absolutely obscene. This is the week I decided for the first time in my life to go to Hershey Park. Oh, for the love of God, what a lousy idea that was. Hershey Park was wonderful. I didn't know they had a water park. So, you know, from the chapter of the book, find out where you're going before you go there. So I didn't have a bathing suit, which I really wished I'd had. But what an amazing... The roller coasters at that place are just incredible. Of course, the two wooden roller coasters and then all those other roller coasters, the one continuous, one roller coaster that's always got a car on the tracks and the ones that shoot you out like you're going to warp speed. And just, it was just amazing. It was hot. It was hot. I got to the... we were with some little kids when I got to the water park department section. You know, you couldn't go to the wave pool or anything unless you had a bathing suit on, but you could go to the regular water park and go in with the little kids. And I just sat down. I just sat down and let the big bucket of water fall on me. It just was that hot. And you can't help but wonder, when you're seeing these kinds of temperatures, what's causing the heat? Now, obviously it's summer. Or, as we say in Maine, it's not just summer, it's a scorcher. It is hot. But these hot temperatures may or may not be a symptom of global climate change. And certainly the hotter sea temperatures are a big problem. John Akison, whose job is to keep an eye on this stuff from Nebraska, scientist out in Nebraska, is going to be joining us. He has to call us back, though, so we're going to take a little wander around the topics in the news. And if you've got the time and you want to weigh in, 888-520-7425. Did you see the controversy over Rolling Stone? The cover of Rolling Stone this month has the living, alleged Boston Marathon bomber. They have his picture on the cover of Rolling Stone, and people have said that, I would say his name, Jokar Tarznev, I apologize for destroying his name. Critics say that the picture of the kid on the cover is too glamorous, that there shouldn't be a glamorous picture of this kid. He's evil. He's bad. A whole pile of stores, CVS and Walgreens, announced Wednesday that they will not carry the issue of Rolling Stone that has the alleged Boston Marathon bomber on the cover. I say alleged because everybody's entitled to their day in court. The cover of the magazine's August 1st edition, it should be out everywhere, but now it is not because they have the picture of this kid. That, of course, April 15th, Patriots Day, was the day of the bombing. It killed three people and wounded more than 260 others. Rolling Stone editor said in a statement that the story falls with the tradition of journalism and the magazine's commitment to serious and thoughtful coverage. The fact that he's young in the same age group of many of their readers makes it all that much more important for us to examine complexities in this issue and gain some insight and understanding how a tragedy like this happens. Of course, people don't think it's a tragedy. People think it's a villainy, and they don't want a villain on the cover of Rolling Stone. I think there have been a lot of villains on the cover of a lot of magazines. I seem to remember Time magazine had Adolf Hitler's picture on the cover. As far as Boston Mayor Tom Menino, who wrote a letter to Rolling Stone publisher Jan Wenner, among those we lost, those who survived, and those who helped carry them forward, there are artists, musicians, dancers, and writers. They have dreams and plans. They struggle and strive. The survivors of the Boston attacks deserve Rolling Stone cover stories, although I no longer feel that Rolling Stone deserves them. I'm with you on that one. I'd love to see Rolling Stone do a story on those musicians and dancers and writers all across the country that never get any kind of attention. It is, of course, their fame that gets them into Rolling Stone. And I think that Rolling Stone's a periodical like any other periodical, and I really do like that First Amendment. So CVS has a right not to carry the magazine, but Rolling Stone has a right to put who they want on their cover. If you have an opinion on that, you give us a call, 888-520-7425. But in the meantime, it's been a wicked hot summer so far, extremely hot, and wildfires in Arizona and all kinds of things that have been going on, weather all across the United States and the globe. Maybe not what was predicted, or maybe it is. Maybe man has no impact at all. Joining us right now, John Atkison, who's going to tell us the truth. What's the truth, John? Are we doing this? Are we doing this to ourselves?
There, according to the people who do this for a living, there is no way to explain any phenomenon without putting it in the context of the new global warming reality.
So it just wouldn't have been 100 degrees every day this week otherwise?
It's more like it wouldn't have been 100 degrees every day this week while it's also 100 degrees in next door. And it's just a whole combination of things that's just, it's way out. If you remember your statistics, you can say it's, and what the top climatologists say is, you've got a three sigma anomaly, which means it's three standard deviations from the mean, which to real lay people, it means that this is some weird stuff, and it just don't happen unless there's a really big reason.
Yeah, well, treat me like the real lay person, because that's what I am. So these fires, the horrible tragedy of the fire that turned on those firefighters and killed them in Arizona, these fires, they're not necessarily normal.
Global warming and the climate disruptions and the extreme heat and drought that we're seeing, global warming doesn't cause all these things. It makes them worse. You remember the old commercial, so-and-so company doesn't make the thing, it makes the thing better?
Mm-hmm.
Well, global warming doesn't make hurricanes. Global warming makes them stronger. Mm-hmm. Global warming does not make droughts. Global warming makes them worse. Global warming does not by itself create a hot summer. But damn if it don't turn up the heat.
Now, what about Governor Perry? He's been praying.
Oh, so... we have to talk about him. I mean, really. He needs to pray for himself. You know, isn't that enough for him? Really. I'm sorry. I digress.
That's why we love you, John, because you lay it out just the way it is. So, but he's had a state day of prayer. He's had all these different things. He's had official state. I mean, I saw a petition this week to put Jesus on the penny.
Well, you know, there's petitions all over, and you know.
But, you know, isn't Jesus the one who went into the temple and said, you know, no money changing? Like, so it's like, is there a point, even if you're a religious person, where you can accept the science of the fact that, you know, the planet's in motion and we're doing things on the planet and we maybe need to be a little more?
But the interesting thing is that there's an evangelical component to the movement to stop the worst of climate change. And like many religious folks, they call it creation care. And there are many leading organizations and individuals in the evangelical Christian movement who feel very strongly about it and are deeply committed to changing the way that we live on this planet. In fact, there's a scientist at Texas Tech, by the name of Catherine Hayhoe, who is an evangelical Christian. In fact, her husband is the preacher at the local evangelical church, independent church, and she is a leading voice for bringing that faith community into the center of the struggle to stop screwing this up.
Yeah.
You don't, there are many scientists who, in fact, have strong religious beliefs and who, in some of them, actually take their science almost as a form of worship because they're looking with great care, great detail, and great reverence and awe at this incredible physical system and its emergent property that we call life. You know, and if you really think about it very long, you do sort of get goosebumps.
Yeah.
And that translates into a very religious kind of a feeling for a lot of people. And if you're in a deist concept, a context where, you know, your basic frame of reference is that God made this stuff, well, you know, if you're sincere, that has consequences for how you live your life.
It's
important.
The way I look at things is, even if we don't have an impact, even if running millions of cars, a billion cars, I guess we're going to have pretty soon. even if our coal burning plants and even if none of that has an impact, if we have an alternative that doesn't put a whole pile of dirt into the air and a whole pile of pollutant into the water and if we have alternatives, why not just use them anyway?
You know, I have a problem with that, but what I don't have a problem with is I have to interrupt us to bring a news bulletin of really, really good news.
What's that?
Today I went to the monthly administrative board meeting for Lincoln Electrical System. Now, I'm here in Lincoln, Nebraska. Who would have thought? But here I am. Bright red state by conventional thinking and by the results that our rather odd political system delivers. But nonetheless, this is the only state in the union that has 100% public power.
Hmm.
And some of the public power districts and entities and organizations actually act like it. But at any rate, LES, Lincoln Electric System, just announced today that they have signed a 20-year contract to take on the output from a 100-megawatt wind farm. Now, that's a pretty big wind farm. It's 23 square miles. And, you know, the output over time, the cost of that electricity is so low that over time it will be a downward trend, downward pressure on electrical rates here by 3 or 4%.
So you have this public utility. So does that mean that it's owned by the people?
It does mean it's owned by the people. In fact, Lincoln Electric System is a division of city government.
Huh.
It comes under the city council when it comes to rates, but otherwise, it pretty much is its own freestanding division of government. There are other public power districts that are divisions of state government. Omaha Public Power District and Nebraska Public Power District are the other two major generating utilities in the state. And they've all got some wind power because Nebraska sits here. We're in the top tier for renewable resources for both wind and solar power, and we're in the top 3 or 4, depending on how you count it, for wind power in the country. We have some of the best stuff going. And so it's wonderful that we're finally breaking some of the log jams here and getting public power, these rather traditionalistic entities, to actually make major moves in that direction. And the one reason that they're able to do it is that the price for electricity from big wind is now below the price for coal-fired electricity.
Wow.
We got to heaven, y'all. Here we are.
Now, real quick, we only have like 2 more minutes, John. What about the naysayers who say you can't count on wind because you'll have a glut of it when you don't need it and you won't have enough wind when you do need it?
Nothing is perfect. Wind ain't perfect. The sun goes down. Solar ain't perfect. But coal-fired power is 1,000 times worse. It's not only killing us with asthma and heart disease and pulmonary disease, but, you know, it's killing the whole planet with global warming, and it is. There's absolutely no serious doubt about that fact. It's pretty well understood.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to make the switch. It's a matter of figuring out how to manage it. But by 2030, we could be over 90% to renewables throughout the United States of America. We have the resource. We have the ingenuity. We're figuring out how to do it. We're inventing ways to store the electricity. It's all coming together, and there's very little excuse for not getting on a bandwagon and going clean.
You know, John, I always expect to like be so depressed and like pulling out my chest hairs after I talk to you because, you know, the world's coming to a cataclysmic end, but you're all just full of good news.
Well, it is, and don't get me wrong. We could still screw this up and go right down. We are right on the edge. The top climatologist we've got, Jim Hansen, has for several years been saying we know enough to say that if we reduce greenhouse gas pollution by 6% a year, starting in 2013, which is sort of a familiar date, then we will have a high probability of avoiding the worst consequences of global warming. So that's hopeful, and it's already 2013, folks.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And the 350 now is really technically got to change its name to 400 because our parts per...
That was a hopeful thing, too, because we thought, you know, when that organization was founded, that if we could just get back to 350, we'd be okay. And now we probably think we need to dial it back further. But even if we were to tag 450, if we only stayed there for about 30 minutes and started reducing, we might be okay.
Mm.
But we are so close to the point of no return. But the best scientists, the folks who do this for a living, who we listen to and are warned by and take very seriously, they also say, most of them say, no, the science indicates that as best we can figure, that if we get our shit together, if we get it together, we'll probably not avoid global warming because we've got that now,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to get worse. But at least we can retain the planet that our species evolved on, that our civilization developed in, and, you know, we won't buy the farm.
Yeah. But one last question. You spent a lot of time working on these issues in New Orleans. Do you have a crystal ball for the hurricane season this year?
You know, I don't. In fact, there's a friend of mine who's a retired meteorologist, and, you know, it's just so many weird things happening this year. Like, you know how weather goes across the country west to east?
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? This year, part of it's going east to west, and some of it's landing in Texas. You know, it's just...
Is this a Nino really... thing?
No. Mm. No, it's a we don't know what the hell's going on thing.
Huh.
We remember, we never screwed up an entire planet quite this way before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we got to figure this out as we're going along. But the amazing thing is that we seem, you know, in the persons of the leading scientific folks who do this all day, every day, for their whole lives, we are starting to get a much better handle on it, even though the thing is changing as we're looking at it, because we put so much more energy into the system with this global warming. That's what it's all about, is trapping the heat energy in the Earth's system. And sometimes more stays in the atmosphere. A lot of it's going into the deep ocean. But that's a whole other program.
You know, I have a desire, really a strong desire, to think that we can all sort of kumbaya our way out of this, just mostly because, you know, I'm half Captain Kirk, and I think that there's no such thing as the no-win scenario, and you know, if we have to, we'll go into the past and get a couple of whales and bring them to the future, and everything will be fine. But we really do have to start contacting our legislators, contacting our congresspeople, and talking about why it will, in the long run, be more profitable if they just... For private business, let's face it, capitalism is driving our train off the cliff. It will be more profitable for those businesses to give us what we want to buy, which is alternative resources.
And, you know, it's coming around to that. The question is, are they going to get off the dime? Are they going to hold the resources hostage for enough money? Right now, the raw economics are in our favor. Things are coming down in price, like this very competitive price, better than a coal-fired electric price for wind that we're seeing here. And, you know, with pitiful little federal support and no support from the state of Nebraska, which is why this wind farm is sitting in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, which is unfortunate, but that's, again, a whole other show. But, you know, the main point is that we are in deep crap. But we know what to do. We know who's doing it. We know they're rogues, and the fossil fuel industry companies and individuals, and we have alternatives. All we have to do is get our butts off the dime, in the streets, in the legislatures, replace the clowns that have created this problem, and put it right, because we know how.
John Akison, thank you for joining us. The Rick Smith Show, when Pat LaMarche fills in, we have the scientists who say butt and crap. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Pat.
Take care. This is Pat LaMarche. I'm filling in for Rick Smith and having a wonderful time. He will be back on Monday. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Thursday saw the fourth unity break by Santa Clara County, California employees. Jesse Russell reports.
The power!
We got the power!
What kind of power?
Union power!
Who's got the power?
Santa Clara County, California saw a fourth day of action by workers who are demanding a fair contract that supports public service and the community. SEIU Local 521 has been organizing Unity Break, where county employees don purple shirts, chant, sing, and take turns explaining why they're part of the union and are seeking a fair contract.
And it's important that as a union we stand unified and stand strong against the county not willing to make us a cutting-edge workforce. So what we're going to say?
No!
Unions also fight for higher wages, which translates to higher wages for all Americans. Strong. We need to be active. We need to be participated. We need to be educated and inform our family and our friends that we want this not just for us, but for everybody. Everybody wins when we're in a union.
The county contract expires on July 23rd.
Presidents of three unions are calling on House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid to fix the Affordable Care Act's impact on union health care plans. James Hoffa of the Teamsters, Joe Hansen of the United Food and Commercial Workers, and Unite Here President D. Taylor all expressed deep concern over the impact the Affordable Care Act is going to have. The union leaders say without an equitable fix, the health care reform will shatter not only hard-earned union health benefits, but the very foundation of the basic 40-hour work week. The union presidents say their concerns so far have been met with a stone wall at the White House. Among their concerns are that the health care reform law creates perverse incentives that include an incentive for employers to keep work hours limited to 30 hours per week. They also say nonprofit health care plans operated jointly by employers and unions under the Taft-Hartley Act are threatened because union employees will be treated differently when it comes to insurance subsidies. The union leaders say common sense corrections can be made to how the law is interpreted, but time is running out to fix it. A Florida group called Dream Defenders is protesting the Trayvon Martin verdict at Florida's Capitol and Governor's office. They say they won't leave until the governor calls a special session of the legislature to address the environment that killed Trayvon Martin. The Dream Defenders' agenda is to repeal Florida's Stand Your Ground law, to end racial profiling, and to abolish what they call school-to-prison education policies.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We're not going to let people do school reform in the name of school reform in a way that makes the schools bad. Us educators have a real stake in that.
It's like this broken glass. You get caught before you see it. So open up your eyes. You've got the fire. Throw it out. You've got the
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. I'm Pat LaMarche, filling in for Rick. He's off for the night. Did you say he's fixing his air conditioner? Oh, my God. Fixing it just the night he doesn't need it. 4 days of 100-degree temperatures. It's like 85. It feels like winter. But that quote, Jesse Sharkey, vice president of the Chicago Teachers Union, the night before they went on strike, you know, they banded together. They worked together. They built an alliance. They did some powerful negotiating. And then what happened? Like, is there a Rahm Emanuel Kool-Aid out there that everybody's been drinking and now a couple of thousand education jobs are just hemorrhaged from the Chicago public school system? Sheehan Barrett is with us right now. He's one of those teachers who lost his job today. Sheehan, I'm sorry to hear about your job. Welcome to the Rick Smith Show.
Thank you very much, Pat. It's great to be on.
Yeah, Sheehan, gee, you know, I've only lost a job a couple of times, and the last thing in the world I wanted to do was talk to anybody about it. So I appreciate you taking the time and sharing what the experience is right now. First of all, what kind of teacher are you?
I teach law and Chicago history in Chicago public schools to 11th and 12th graders. And prior to that, I taught Japanese language, so I'm certified in a few different areas.
Wow. So you teach law and history, and history is being changed, and I don't even know about the laws, what's happening with those, but in the history of Chicago, has there been a hemorrhage of 2,000 teachers before, teachers and educators?
I mean, there's been this type of labor strife before, and, I mean, we've even had periods where teachers, the entire teaching staff was working, and the CPS was simply not sending people checks. That's what pushed some of the labor actions, you know, several decades ago.
So the Chicago public school system just didn't pay people for working.
Correct. Hmm. And, you know, these type of strategies are common among the the ruling people of Chicago.
Well, but, you know, that's so bizarre to me because I could see it happening if it was, you know, the guys building the railroad who didn't want to pay the Chinese immigrants or, you know. But we're talking about the government of the city of Chicago, who's got a whole pile of civil servants who are doing the job of educating the young people, and they just don't put any checks in the envelopes?
Yeah, well, and I mean, it may say something about what ran then, and certainly we're seeing something similar now in that these days we don't have an elected school board, so it's just people appointed by the mayor, and our current mayor, Rahm Emanuel, was elected with dollars from the North Shore, which is the affluent area outside of the city limits to the north of the city. So this is a mayor who was paid for by people who do not live in the city of Chicago.
Why would people outside the city of Chicago, that was Freudian, I apologize. Why would people outside the city of Chicago, and I'm going to try never to say it again, why would they want to have sway with the mayor of Chicago, and why would they care if the kids in Chicago get an education? I would think they'd want them to be educated so they don't come to their neighborhood and rob them.
Well, and I mean, there are certainly those type of stereotypes driving things, but also you've got a situation where I don't know if our reputation precedes us, but there's certainly corruption that runs through Chicago government, and what we've seen is under the mayor, lots of money diverted from the public coffers to pet projects, either directly through the Board of Education with private contracts. For example, we just had news break today at the same time that all the layoffs were happening that we've recently, the board chose to close 50 schools this year. And one of the mayor's friendly electrical companies had just done a bunch of contracts in the schools that were closing. So this is not uncommon. We've seen this also, air conditioners placed in schools which don't have the power grid to support air conditioners. And
these are just contracts that cronies got because an appointed school board and appointed officials are throwing money around.
Exactly. And then the unique in Chicago is that many cities have TIF funds. They're like tax
incremental financing. Yeah.
Exactly. And so in Chicago, it's just that they're used very aggressively. The blighted areas that they're being used to fix are often in the Central Loop. The Magnificent Mile gets quite a lot of TIF funding, and so what you're talking about is directly diverting hundreds of million dollars a year that would normally be going to schools and parks and libraries to pet projects by many of the mayor's allies. So, for example, we just heard this month that he's giving $5 million, you know, $2.5 million of which would be directly in the school's fund to give to Vienna Beef hot dogs.
Why?
Because the idea is that, Vienna Beef is a business in the city of Chicago, and they may not be able to continue making the brilliant profits that they're making if this school money is not diverted. So,
are they buying the hot dogs for the kids in the schools?
No, in fact, it was interesting because when that news came out, one of the parent groups directly with the schools went to Vienna Beef and said, if you're going to take our kids' school money, the least you could do is donate some free hot dogs to some of our events, and Vienna Beef refused.
Yeah, and by the way, they're not free. We just paid you $5 million for them.
Is there a recall?
I mean, Rahm Emanuel seems to be like just this bad news that has been elected in Chicago, and is there any effort to make him no longer mayor?
We don't have a recall policy in the city of Chicago, but there's been a growing campaign that support called the One Term Mayor campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like in terms of looking for other options and registering voters for the next election. Mm-hmm. But I'd also, and I mean, you know, I'm part of the Caucus of Rank and File Educators, which is taking control of the Chicago's teachers union based on community organizing and a fighting union, a member of union, improving education for all students, these type of things. And, you know, one of the things that we've really focused on is it's not about one election or even one mayor. Of this type of dictatorial control, Rahm Emanuel has been able to do a lot of damage as an individual, but the people's interest he's serving, you know, many people when Mayor Daley was leaving were saying that, oh, this is, you know, this will be the end of our problem. Mm. People just put in Rahm Emanuel. So right. It's a system.
Yeah.
So, you know,
we're having a certain amount of technical difficulty. Sometimes your phone breaks up, I worry about you because your phone's probably the least of your problems right now. You know.
Well, I do appreciate that. And you know, with a lot of these, you know, on this day, of course, many people are focused on the 2,100 of us that are no longer have employment with Chicago Public Schools. But I really think it's important for people to focus on the young people we serve.
Mm-hmm.
We deserve dignity. We deserve to be treated right as workers. We deserve to, when we do our work, to have a stable workplace. But our stable workplace is also a stable learning environment for our students. And we're talking about students, you know, who represent a wide spectrum, but many have other strong adult supporters in their lives. And so we build alliances with parents. We also support students who, you know, are in the foster care system or, you know, have not found a strong foster home and are just being pushed around by the state service. So,
the system, yeah. They, sometimes a teacher is the only adult a child has that anchor. Now, real quickly, just to take you off on a side of something I don't know a lot about, but I just want you to fill in the gap because with fewer workers, I imagine, you're going to have a longer school day?
They switched to it this year, and that's something that we definitely want to caution other cities about, is that the mayor unilaterally ran through this longer school day and promised all these extra services, used money to hire some extra art teachers and PE teachers.
I hear, though, all the artwork's going to be made out of Vienna sausage. It's just going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
It's going to be like Stonehenge.
We're faced with seeing a lot of how the sausage is made these days in Chicago. But all of these people hired are being fired, so we may need to rely on Vienna sausage to do those extra programs. So,
So he made the day longer. Your phone's breaking up. He's made the day longer and then promised, what, maybe some of those things that school departments are losing, the art, the music, the things that school departments are losing, promised he'd put that back in if he got the longer school day. And now they've just hemorrhaged all these workers, and they're still going to have a longer school day? Is that a fair?
Yeah, they've made no move to back off on the longer school day. So they put in extra time. They put in some minimal extra resources. And then they're now removing all those resources, firing beyond the extra people hired, and then trying to continue on with the longer school day. So it's very much this lean production model that, you know, you see in the business world where people, the management pushes production further and further, but doesn't actually support workers with any type of resources to succeed.
I was able to go to one of the inaugural balls this year, and the inaugural ball I went to was put on by the state of Illinois because they were proud of their son who was the president of the United States. And I'm just curious, has the president weighed in on his home state and his home city and the stuff that's going on?
No, we haven't seen any. In fact, during our strike, we did write to the president reminding him of his promise that he'd be the first one out on the picket line when workers were in trouble. And, you know, we understand the president is a very busy man, but he did not follow through on that promise. Mm-hmm. And in fact, while we support the historic nature of his presidency and, you know, a president deals with many complex issues, we're very frustrated with his stances in education that seem to be very much lockstep with the privatizing interests, pushing lower performing but privatized charter schools, moving money away from long-term need-based grants to competitive grants. These are challenges. And, I mean, I did do a year term. I won a national teaching year term with the Department of Education, and there are great people there. And you know, I do believe that people are trying their best.
I think that you're kind to say they're trying their best. I think that maybe they've forgotten what their best is. I think you have put, Sheehan, you have put a name, a moniker on this presidency that I really needed just now, and you said you respect the historic nature of his presidency. I feel the same way, but my God, I wish you'd stop disappointing me.
Yeah, and I feel that, and, you know, the expectations were higher, and so it feels like more of a betrayal.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I mean, our students were very, very, very motivated by President Obama's first election. But when they saw that the policies that were trickling down to their schools, I mean, it's one thing to appreciate the history, and it's another thing to be hurt by poor policy.
Mm-hmm. Excellently put. Hey, Sheehan, can we check in with you as time progresses? I hope that you're going to be okay, and we'd just like to see how things go on in Chicago. What can people do to help you?
I think there's a number of things. I mean, a lot of people have been calling the mayor's office, and then we've had lots of people helping circulate the story. We've had going to the White House to intervene as well. I think the largest thing, though, is this longer-term fight, though, for public education in general. And these austerity, you know, today the effect may be ripping needed teachers out of Chicago public school classrooms. Next month it may be attacking public service, you know, public union workers' pensions, health care facilities or libraries.
Mm-hmm.
We need to see this as a joint battle. We need to struggle on this together. The students I teach are starting to see that. Today I got a lot of messages, very, very helpful, supportive messages from friends saying, you know, we believe in you, this is wrong, whatever we can. And students that said, what they're doing to all of us is wrong. And what are we doing? And I think that's, as is often the case, my students teach me a tremendous amount, often more than I'm teaching them. So
that sounds like a tall
really
order. You sound like a Japanese-speaking, very smart fella.
Well, I do. I do my, you know, teachers, clerks, teaching assistants, psychologists, you know, many, many people who build strong relationships with the young people of Chicago and are counted upon. And so we need to think about this, you know, how are we going to fight against these forces that I know people might not like drawing this connection, but we should be just as angry at young people of color being denied equitable education as we are about being denied civil rights. Basically, it's the same type of discrimination that's occurring.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's fight to change this.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think when you allow, it's like any abuse. You allow a little bit and your abuser gets more abusive. And
yeah,
so if we allow kids not to have their education, taking their life isn't that far away on the next step. And sadly, we're seeing the different level of that. I mean, Pennsylvania's no stranger to closing schools and hemorrhaging teachers. And certainly what's gone on in Philadelphia this year is a horrible echo of what's happening in Chicago. And I think you're right. I think if we start saying, well, okay, you can abuse me a little, it's just a matter of time before they abuse us a lot.
Absolutely. And fighting these austerity arguments that we just don't have enough money to give kids their basic human rights. If as a country we can't provide students with a strong education and provide to the families of the people who provide that education, then why are we doing? These are cornerstone rights of a democratic society, and we all need to fight for them.
As long as we stay a democratic society. Sheehan Barrett, thank you so much for taking the time. Good luck with everything you're doing, and we'll be checking in with you.
Thank you, Pat.
Yep. I'm Pat LaMarche, filling in for Rick Smith. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
Is it just me, or has American politics regressed from its normal abnormal to become full-blown wacky? So many politicos these days seem off the wall, personally peculiar, and, dare I say it, queer. Not if Representative Daryl Metcalf is within earshot. He gets spooked by such talk. A raging homophobe, this Republican legislator in Pennsylvania blocked a gay colleague from delivering a speech on the House floor about the Supreme Court's June decisions on same-sex marriage. Daryl, the self-appointed sheriff of permissible speech, literally shut off the gay legislator's intended comments. He had to, Daryl blathered, because the speech would have been just open rebellion against what God has said and just open rebellion against God's law. Imagine how pleased God must be to have Daryl translating for him. Or is it her? Whatever. Let's move on to Texas, where U.S. Representative Michael Burgess is always full of little-known scientific facts about abortion. For example, to explain his support of an extremist bill to ban mothers from having any choice of abortion after the 20th week of pregnancy, Burgess revealed that even the teeny tiniest of fetuses feel pain, for he knows they feel pleasure. How does he know that? Because he claims to have seen sonograms of 15-week-old boy fetuses trying to masturbate. I have to ask, don't our privacy laws protect fetuses from peeping toms? And shouldn't you have to have an IQ above room temperature to serve in Congress? This is Jim Hightower saying, but such a standard could eliminate all the amusement value in American politics, including this guy who recently declared, "Everybody tells me, please run for president." Yes, that's the Donald, Donnie Trump, still babbling about his favorite topic, himself. Every circus needs a clown, so run, Donnie, run!
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I gotta listen to man.
Pat LaMarche here, filling in for Rick Smith. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Healthcare and education are part of a democracy. That's what Sheehan Barrett said. Teaches 11th and 12th graders history. teaches them the important things they need to know, and is also capable of teaching Japanese. But he's extra. He's extra chaff now in that wheat they call the Chicago public school system. Healthcare and education are part of a democracy. I had someone send me an email today saying that we don't have a democracy anymore. We have a gerontocracy. Gerontocracy is a form of oligarchical rule in which the entity is ruled by leaders who are significantly older than the adult population. So we've got these old white guys, and they're running stuff. Did you see one of the Koch brothers said recently that people in the United States should cheer up because they're in the top 1% of the world? And so if you make $34,000 a year, you're in the top 1% of the world, because he's counting the 18,000 children who will starve to death today and their neighbors who will starve to death tomorrow. 18,000 children starve to death every day in the world. And so he wants all those people who make $34,000 or less, you know, run some minimum wage in the United States, to feel lucky. They're not as lucky as him, who has $43 billion with a B. But they're lucky because they're not one of the 18,000 people who will starve to death today. Although some of those people who starve to death will, of course, be in the United States. Just not to the kind of numbers as there are in other continents around the, other countries and other continents around the planet. Just ridiculous. Although he did mention, Sheen also mentioned Chicago corruption, which reminds me of my favorite Chicago saying, which is, when I die, bury me in Chicago so I can keep voting. Always loved that one. It's a shame. Chicago public schools today laid off 1,074 teachers, 451 paraprofessionals, and 550 other employees. That tops the 850 professionals who lost their positions in June, and the 550 probationary appointed teachers who won't be going to work, even though there is now a longer school day, supposedly so kids can make up for what was cut in the past. These are the decisions being made by a non-elected school board. I think that's probably the first thing that has to change. You know, I just wish that, you know, I wish that Barack Obama would live up to the historic legacy of his presidency. I think Sheehan put it perfectly. There's a whole pile of name calling going on, and one of the names being called is folks are calling, or one in particular, a reverend, a man of the cloth, has called Trayvon Martin a thug. He says Sharpton and Jesse Jackson are race hustlers and poverty pimps, and that Trayvon Martin is a thug. Reverend Jesse Lee Patterson, president of the Brotherhood Organization of a New Destiny. If you're a Christian, can you really have a new destiny? Don't you have to have the destiny that kind of went along with the, with your faith? Brotherhood Organization of a New Destiny, otherwise known as BOND, a conservative nonprofit, made the contentious statements on Piers Morgan Tonight. Now, I got problems with Piers Morgan, and I've had him ever since it came out that he was one of the employees from the UK who had been hacking phones. Remember the scandal in the UK about the hacked phones? One of a kidnapped girl who they were hacking the phone to check her messages, members of the media, and the police, because of this hacking, thought that the girl was still alive. Thought she was checking her phone messages when actually it was just the reporters. Piers Morgan, a few years before that, was one of these alleged journalists who was doing the hacking. So he's not perfect either. But he was interviewing this Jesse Lee Peterson. And Jesse Lee Peterson said the case wasn't, the case of Trayvon Martin was not a case of race at all. You have race hustlers and poverty pimps like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and others who turned it into a race issue in order to gain power and wealth. I just don't understand how you get power and wealth out of that, but I don't know how you turn that tragedy into power and wealth. But Peterson also targeted President Barack Obama, calling his comment about Martin, you know, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. He called that insane. I don't think it's insane. I actually think he looks a lot like Trayvon. He said that it was to incite the anger of black Americans and others. I think the most hurtful thing I heard leading up to the verdict was all these people who said, if the verdict doesn't come out right, we're going to have race riots. And, of course, we didn't. The only people who predicted race riots were racists. People took the travesty of justice or travesty of injustice a lot better than I would have, or a lot better than I have. I'm still upset. I think we need to do something. We need to change the laws in this country so that people can't just shoot each other because they think they're scared, or they're thinking they might get scared, or they're scared they'll get scared, or whatever it is. Anyway, it's quite upsetting. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll come back with a check on the news, and we'll finish up this night off of Rick Smith's. I'm Pat LaMarche filling in for Rick, and we'll be right back.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
It was 75 years ago that Capital Blue Cross officially opened for business. From our earliest days, serving our customers has been at the heart of everything we do. Together we've lived history and made history. And we're here to help guide you as we navigate a new era in healthcare together. Explore affordable health insurance options and use our free online tools to search for a provider, look up treatment costs, and more. All at capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, celebrating 75 years of service. Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show. I'm Pat LaMarche. I'm filling in for Rick. I've been here all night. We've been having a great time. Back with my BFF, my new BFF, Brett. I'm so happy to be back. This is my first night back on the show since we went off on our one-month trip. I thought maybe I'd been put on restriction, you know. I mean, a little bit of Pat LaMarche goes a long way, but it turns out that everything's just fine. And with us right now to talk about the news is Victoria Jones. Victoria, welcome back to the Rick Smith Show.
Thank you.
You're far more regular here than me, so I should probably have you do the introduction.
No.
Hey, it's my first chance talking to you since we went away on the trip, and I didn't really get a chance to thank you for the wonderful time that we had in New York City, which seems now like 10 years ago.
Yeah, I'm so glad. It was a huge success.
It was a tremendous honor, and it was really, really impressive, I think, to see how well you worked with the folks from Talkers Magazine, how well all of that had gotten put together, and then how hard the folks at the United Nations worked to make sure that we had people to talk to who would speak clearly and profoundly about the important issues in the world. And that was just amazing. I love
it. Yeah, it's a really amazing event. It really is.
Wonderful thing, and I was so glad to be able to participate. But sadly, I'm still in mourning. It's almost a week now since the Trayvon Martin verdict. I wanted to be surprised. I'm not surprised. I'm just disgusted. And it just seems so upsetting, and, you know, I don't know. It's despairing. But the president did come out and have a few words to say. He spoke in the briefing room about Trayvon Martin. And how did that go?
Well, it was quite extraordinary. I mean, it was really beyond having a few words. He think he rocked the country. This was, you know, I mean, he came out and said that Trayvon Martin could have been him 35 years ago. Mm-hmm. He spoke really for the first time as an African-American man in a way that he never has done before.
Do you think that that was something that just had to, I mean, one of the critics of his speech that I read online said, you know, 1,000 black kids have died since Trayvon Martin died in the United States. He doesn't really care. He doesn't really care about black kids. First of all, I can't believe that.
There are so many people who hate this president that I think that what he said today is going to bring the haters out of the woodwork more than you could possibly imagine. I think we're going to hear more hate coming out and more venom coming out against President Obama as a result of what he said than you could possibly imagine.
I do know that it seemed like 30 minutes later the Washington Post actually had transcribed his words. So instead of just, they actually got right on top of it, had it all put into writing so you could read it. I mean, that was something that they don't often do, certainly not for a casual discussion.
Yeah, no, they had it up before the White House had its own transcript up. It was really fast.
Yeah.
It was very, very interesting. I thought it was fascinating because when he said things like, you know, there are very few African American men who haven't had the experience of walking across the street and hearing the locks click on the doors of cars. Yeah. That spoke to white people who've done it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there are a lot of people who've done it.
Yeah.
And he talked about, you know, there are very few African Americans who haven't had the experience of getting on an elevator and a woman clutching her purse nervously and holding her breath until she has a chance to get off.
Mm.
This was really powerful stuff. But he didn't just talk about that. He also talked about how things are better in America than they used to be.
I don't think Trayvon Martin would agree with that.
No, I'm sure he wouldn't. But he talked about how things generally in race are better than they used to be. And he talked about how that, you know, for the next generation, he thinks things are improving. And he also came up with what he thought were, you know, things that we suggested, three suggestions that he had. You know, he came up with, he didn't even call them solutions, actually. Didn't go that far. He came up with suggestions for things that we could do to try and move on these large social issues.
And what were these suggestions?
Well, one of them, and, you know, he's not saying that these are the be-all and the end-all. These are just, look, you know, we've been throwing ideas around. These are things that we're thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
One is to get the Justice Department involved with training local governments to reduce mistrust in the legal system.
Yeah, that's a big one.
It's a big one. One is to examine local laws like Stand Your Ground and see if they may, quote, encourage the kinds of altercations and confrontations and tragedies that we saw in the Florida case rather than diffuse potential altercations.
Yeah.
And then another one, and, you know, he said that this was really more of a long-term one, was to think about ways to bolster and reinforce African-American boys so they don't get caught up in the legal system.
Now, that's a pretty important one. And I mean, I ran a homeless shelter for a long time, and a 12-year-old black boy had the same odds of going to prison as going to college until he got to the shelter level, and then the odds for prison went up. And
it
blew my mind that we were stacking the deck so badly against young black men. And that's an accepted reality it's an accepted reality by the people who pay attention, but then some of these people who are so angry right now, they aren't even aware of their own white privilege to the amount that they don't even know that this is true for black people.
I think that when you have white privilege, it's very difficult to know that you're privileged.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you know, all I've been thinking about today, and I've had different days of thought about this, like, you know, I feel like I'm going through the stages of grief, but what was his name? Getz? The guy on the subway Am I playing that? Oh, my God, no one's going to remember
this. Yeah,
yeah. Who shot the kids and basically said he felt threatened. It's almost like they sought about making laws, Alec and the NRA sought about making laws to legitimize that Bernie Getz or Benny Getz or whatever that guy's name was, to legitimize that fear. To say, okay, now this is not the only person who felt that fear. You all know you feel it. You all know you do. Here, buy a gun.
Interesting.
And it's just been, you know, poking around my mind all day. Okay, so John Kerry announcing that Israelis and Palestinians are close enough to an agreement that they think they're going to resume peace talks.
Well, I don't know that I'd go that far. At least they're close enough to talking that they're going to resume peace talks. I think they're an awful long way from an agreement. They've reached an agreement that establishes a basis for talking.
Huh. Now, these talks are going to go on in Washington, D.C.?
They're going to start in Washington, D.C. in about a week. Now, there are so many caveats here. There's language like hopeful, establish a basis, if everything goes as expected, things like that. Mm. Welcome step forward, in the process of being formalized, not going to talk about any of the elements now. It's very, very delicate. Anything could go wrong.
Hi, Hosey.
I mean, they really want this to happen, but they know that this could be jinxed really easily.
Yeah. It just seems like it's always felt like someone was trying to negotiate a little bighorn. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's delicate. They want this to happen, and obviously the two sides are still quite a long way apart because the issue of Jewish settlements in the West Bank remains one of the big stumbling blocks between the two sides.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that will be something. I crossed into the Palestinian territory a couple of years ago through the wall, and I was, you know, I mean, I guess the whole world wants walls on some level. I mean, certainly we've got our ghastly wall along the Mexican border. It just never seems to be a very good solution to anything. Now I'm always filled with trepidation when I see things like the other day when they announced that they were going to cut or could cut 20% of the military brass. My instant thought was, yeah, so they can hire private contractors. I never thought they were going to reduce the number of people anywhere, and I don't think they will. I think they're just privatizing things. So I am the world's worst cynic, just to warn you. House passes GOP bill to replace No Child Left Behind and reduce federal role in education. I think this is a way to roll it all out to the states, so the things that are going on like they did in Chicago today where they laid off all the educators, they're just going to put the power back in the states so the states can just completely destroy education once and for all. Is that possibly true?
Well, this is all about giving control to states and local authorities. Mm. That's what this is about. That's what this law is about. It's about saying to local school districts, it's up to you.
Well, if they did away with No Child Left Behind, that would be good. But to, you know, that's such a, you know, I always thought the federal government was there so that things like the black kids who needed to be escorted into their schools could finally get their education. You know, that's why you have a federal government to trump the state government when it does something wrong. I think what the last couple of administrations kind of showed us was that the federal government was there to force states to do something wrong. and now everybody wants federal hands off so those states can hopefully do something right. But there are an awful lot of capital, state capital governments that I don't put a lot of faith in.
Well, and, you know, that's, I think, one of the reasons, well, there are many, many reasons, because there are things in the bill that Senate doesn't like. I mean, President Obama's already issued a veto threat, for a start, and I don't think this isn't the way it's written going to get through the Democratic-led Senate. So if this came to the Senate, there would have to be massive rewriting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Congress seems to be awfully mean-spirited lately. I mean, eliminating food stamps from the farm bill. They just seem to be ever doing anything they can in the House to be just as mean-spirited as they can, even though they know that the Senate's never going to let that stuff fly.
Yeah, they got two very, like, totally polar opposite ways of looking at things.
Mm-hmm. Now, the last item, the Kids Act on Immigration. This is a proposal from some GOP leaders, I guess, to offer a pathway to citizenship to children brought to the U.S. illegally by their parents. Now, are they going to throw the parents out and keep the kids? Is this the proposal?
Well, it's not exactly clear whether they would throw the parents out or not. I mean, there's a lot that's not clear about this. And in fact, it's not clear, depending on who you talk to and which day of the week it is and whether they've had a cup of coffee or not, whether the proposal contains a pathway to citizenship or a pathway to legalization. But if it did contain a pathway to citizenship, they're trying to see which conservatives would come on board with them, because they would need to get a lot of conservatives on board to really get it through and to get the kind of support that they want to get. And they're finding that conservatives who they thought would come on board, because these are the children mm-hmm. who've done nothing, mm-hmm. Are actually saying, well, no, we're about border security. We're not on board with this. This is more amnesty, basically, some people are saying.
Well, I mean, again, we're back to a wall people want to put up between the us's and the them's and the I got mines and you can't have any's. And, you know, I guess I feel like I live in a culture of fear now, where everybody's just supposed to be afraid of their fellow person to the benefit of someone who wants to exclude people from whatever piece of the pie is left, you know, which seems to be just getting smaller anyway. Victoria Jones, thank you so much. You'll have your Rick Smith back on Monday night, but it's always a pleasure to chat with you.
Well, I like talking with you.
Great. Have a wonderful evening. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
This is the Rick Smith Show. I'm Pat LaMarche filling in, and we'll be back coming up right after this.
Never you will look back again. You fight on to the end. Together we will live on forevermore. In this land we have defended from all things that go. Now we are defenseless.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
The steel strike of 1919 was called the Hunky Strike because most of the workers were either first or second generation immigrants from Eastern and Central Europe. Up until the end of World War I, workers had benefited from shorter hours, better pay, and the promise of union recognition. Once the war came to an end, the mill owners pursued anti-union open shop policies and other cost-cutting measures. During the strike, there was near total suppression of all civil liberties. Major work issues included the 12-hour day, the 7-day work week, scores of workers being injured and maimed, union recognition, and poverty wages. Mary Harris, better known as Mother Jones, fought tirelessly throughout her life for social justice and human rights as a labor leader and a worker advocate. On August 20th, while visiting striking miners in Homestead, Pennsylvania, home of U.S. Steel's famous Homestead Steelworks, she defied injunctions against public gatherings and addressed 5,000 striking workers and their families. This speech led to her being arrested and jailed for giving an unauthorized speech. When brought before the judge, she was asked who had signed her permit to speak at a public gathering. She answered, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams. As the strike went on, Mother Jones, the grandmother of all agitators, gave many speeches to rally the workers. One speech in Chicago was described by a spy for the U.S. War Department's Military Intelligence Division as the foulest and most profane that can be imagined, teeming with ultra-radical suggestions. Welcoming the spies, she would invite them to the front of the crowd so they could report her words accurately. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
That Queen.
Oh,
I love a little Queen. This is Pat LaMarche filling in for Rick Smith, who took the night off. And if he's heard any of this show, he'll never do it again. Hey, former Romney spokesperson has a one-word reaction to the Detroit bankruptcy filing. Ryan Williams, a former spokesperson for Mitt Romney's campaign, tweeted his commentary on Detroit's bankruptcy. And his line, his answer, his one-word comment was, ahem. He said, ahem. I just would like to make one more note to the Romney campaign that it's that sort of sterling and stellar commentary that might have lost you this election. I will go on with my contention that President Obama did not win this election. Mitt Romney lost it in a bath of humiliation. And it's not just because he drove around with his dog on the roof. No, he had a lot of other things going for him, like this Stella speechwriter. Ahem. That's his commentary. By the way, when they said the fight was whether or not Romney would let Detroit go bankrupt, and President Obama said he wouldn't let Detroit go bankrupt, and Romney said he would let Detroit go bankrupt, and now Detroit's gone bankrupt. But it wasn't about Detroit. It was about the car companies. And whether or not Mitt Romney would allow the car companies to go bankrupt, not the city of Detroit to go bankrupt, which Brett and I were in Detroit, seems like yesterday, on that trip we were on. And, yeah, Detroit's got some serious problems, like most municipalities do, because, oh, by the way, we've spent the last 15 years financing war. We've spent more on the military than all the other countries in the world combined. And, by the way, the next six countries that spend money on military, they spend the closest amount to us, they're our allies. So us and then the next six closest, we all spend like 80% of the money on military of the whole world before we even get to an enemy. How stupid is that? You want to know why Detroit's bankrupt? Ahem! I'll tell you why. Anyway, this story is amazing. The Houston police have discovered, this is just a couple of hours ago, Houston police discovered several people being held against their will for years in a Texas prison room. Did we really fight to get Texas? Four men arranged in age from 54 to 79 have been found in a Houston house where they were reportedly held for years in what police describe as a prison room. Didn't this just happen in Cleveland? What is there? People are holding people hostage and kidnapping them and keeping them. One guy's been there for 10 years. Officers found the front door nailed shut and alleged victims held in a trash-ridden room with no beds and no chairs. A couple of them were mentally handicapped. And the guy who had the house is alleged to have been cashing their Social Security checks. All right. I have nothing to say. Nothing to say except that if they find out that guy is... I just hope he doesn't have Zimmerman's attorney. Because locking people up for 10 years and keeping their Social Security checks will become completely normal. Just like shooting a kid. It'll all be normal. If everybody could hire that one guy. Berlusconi, you remember him. He was the Prime Minister of Italy, Silvio Berlusconi. He's been found guilty of, his three associates, not him. He has gotten in trouble, and actually he's in jail, but I'll get back to that. Three associates of former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi have been found guilty of procuring prostitutes for his parties. Brett, I know no one can hear you, but you know what these parties were called? They were called the Bunga Bunga parties. Hi, I'm Prime Minister of a country. Would you like to come to my Bunga Bunga party? Emilio Fede, Lei Mora, and Nicole Minetti were given jail sentences of between 5 and 7 years for procuring a couple of prostitutes? Are you kidding me? Last month, Mr. Berlusconi, Elliot Spitzer, he didn't go to jail, right? $5,000 a night he paid that woman. $5,000 a night. I shudder to think of how many times I would have to do anything to get $5,000. 10,000 times. That's my rock bottom offer. Last month, Mr. Berlusconi was given 7 years in jail. That's the prime minister did get 7 years in jail for paying for sex with a 17-year-old girl. Mr. Berlusconi and Ms. Morong deny that they had sex, and she says that she has never been a prostitute, nor did she ever have sex with the prime minister. I did not have sex with that woman. Ms. Morong is one of the women that the three associates in the current trial are alleged to have procured. Mr. Berlusconi is appealing against an earlier ruling which also banned him from public office. So imagine that. If you get in trouble, you're not allowed to run for public office. These three people who worked for him also now have been banned from public office. They're not allowed to hold a public office. The dancers, the prostitutes, alleged prostitutes, said they were just hired to be dancers. They were hired to dance in a raunchy fashion. Well, I think in Italy that's what should be against the law. No Italian should dance poorly. That's it. This story from the New York Times, I think, is kind of horrifying. It takes place in Paris. There was a group of Romanian artwork, just amazing Romanian artwork. Seven pieces were stolen from a museum in Rotterdam. Of course, Rotterdam is in the Netherlands, but the artwork was all Romanian. Seven works, extremely rare pieces. This young man was arrested and charged with stealing the seven pieces of work. And they went and searched his home and found ashes. It appears that his mother did not want him to get in trouble for stealing a Picasso, a Matisse, a Monet, a Gauguin. And so her son had been arrested on suspicion of orchestrating this art robbery. And so she appears to have burned the artwork to dispose of the evidence. What is wrong with the planet? What is wrong with these people? It's just nuts. It's just crazy. Anyway, I've had a blast. It's always wonderful to see my new BFF, Brett. He's off to a wedding tomorrow. I hear rumor that it's his. He keeps denying it. I don't know. He looks all sort of happy and lilting around the studio, so I think he's fibbing. But if he's back here on Monday and not married, that means that he was telling me the truth and he's just going to the wedding of a family friend. But it'll be nice. Family's getting together and he's going to be all gussy. Are you going to take pictures and post them on Facebook for us? No? He says no. Not that kind of wedding. Not a bunga bunga party. I'll tell you what, if it devolves into bunga bunga, I want photos. In the meantime, I jumped him in the elevator when he came down to let me in the building today, because whenever I see Brett now, it's hug a thug. It's my turn to hug a thug. Thanks for joining us tonight. Rick will be back on Monday. I think I'm going to be back on Tuesday. I'll be filling in one night a week for Rick. And I head to Maine after that, so I'll be in on Tuesday. And then, in the meantime, have a wonderful weekend. And if your kid's out tonight, tell them to be careful.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and